using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 3rd of August, year of our Lord, 2021, day 507 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look at the dystopian present. What is happening in Australia? What is happening in Germany? And we're going to look at what will be happening soon. It's going to get much worse. It's okay. We can handle it. We'll be right back. Let's begin with a little bit of good news, and it is just a little bit of good news. We have Bayer, which bought Monsanto a couple of years ago, maybe, about 60-some-odd billion dollars. And that came along with a lot of prepackaged lawsuits over Roundup, glyphosate, that is the basic chemical that's behind it. Roundup is, of course, the brand name for that. In a shocking move, Bayer is going to pull all glyphosate products from store shelves forever. But wait, it's not quite as good as it sounds, and I'll tell you the backside of that, of course. Bayer said that it would remove Roundup from shelves and replace it with new formulations that rely on alternate active ingredients. This move is being made exclusively to manage litigation risk and not because of any safety concerns. And, of course, they would say that because that would help to mitigate their litigation issues. We're not admitting that it's dangerous because we still have these cases pending. And, of course, there's a lot of jury awards that have happened in the last couple of years. Back in 2019, a six-person jury award awarded one individual $75 million in damages and punitive damages, $5 million in compensatory damages for past and future pain and suffering. There has been a lot of linkage to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. People who use this on a professional basis, who get more exposure to it than people who do gardening, but also people who are doing gardening. And although you've got all of the European and American regulatory agencies, you have the US EPA, the European Commission, the Canadian Pest Management Regulatory Agency, all of them say there's no scientific evidence that this is harmful. But, of course, they're saying that about the Trump shots, too, right? And we know what that's all about. These are regulatory agencies that have been captured by the companies that have a lot of money. And so even as they say that, they still admit that there is a strong correlation between the use of this and the non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And quite frankly, in my own personal experience, going back to the 1980s, we had a basset hound that came down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And I thought, that's really strange. And as we were taking him back and forth to get chemo for him, who had the vet school, which in a sense, it kind of sounds crazy to do that for a dog, but in a sense, he would get the chemotherapy for a while, and he would feel really good. He would be out of it for about a day or two, and then he would feel really good. He had no understanding of what his situation was. So he wasn't dealing with any depression or anything like that. And then he'd start feeling really bad. We'd take him down and get some chemotherapy again. He'd feel good for another couple of days, but those intervals kept getting shorter and shorter till it didn't work anymore. But as we were taking him for his chemotherapy, I heard a news report about this exact cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and how it was affecting agricultural workers who were using it in big agri farms, or even just farmers, even if they weren't big agri, they were using it. And I thought, that's kind of interesting, because he was born under a wandering star, I should say, I guess. He loved to hop the fence, and you wouldn't think that a basset hound could do that until I kind of laid in wait one day for him, and I actually saw him climbing up the fence. I couldn't believe it. Little tiny legs, big heavy body. He was able to climb over the fence, perch on it at the top, and then spring off, and he was gone. And he loved to, that was kind of unusual. The other thing that was very unusual about him was, unlike any other dog we've ever had, I've never seen another dog eat grass like he did. I mean, all the time. Sometimes dogs will eat grass if they're not feeling good, but he did it all the time. And we had a lot of neighbors because we lived in a suburb, and they would put signs up, this has just been treated by a chemical lawn company. Keep pets and animals off. And so I'm looking at the signs. I'm listening to the radio. I'm taking him to get chemotherapy. And it's like, oh. And, of course, a lot of evidence to show that, epidemiological evidence to show that connection. But, again, just as we see with vaccines, that's not the case. However, unlike vaccines, these people have got a lot of exposure. They have set aside $4.5 billion should they not get a favorable ruling, because they have appealed a lot of these very big awards. They have appealed them. They're going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. And so they're telling their Wall Street investors, well, this is actually a good thing, because we've set aside $4.5 billion. You think it's going to be capped at that? And there could be an upside. If we get away with this at the Supreme Court level, that's going to be a big bonus for us. So, you might want to buy our stock. Monsanto has lost three high-profile lawsuits in the last few years, $80 million, $78 million, $87 million, so forth, about these cancers, and, of course, bought by the German company Bayer. Experts estimate that they'll have to dole out approximately $8 billion. But, again, it's no big deal. It's kind of like the calculation that Ford made with a Pinto. We could put this cheap part in there that would protect the gas tank from exploding when it's hit from behind in a violent crash. But, we probably will spend less money on lawsuits of people who die than we would if we were to add that cheap part to each and every car. That's the kind of calculations these corporations make. So what they're saying is that it's not going to be completely, it's going to be removed for retail sales, because that's where the people are complaining about it. But they're going to continue to use it on big agricultural farms. They said it is widely regarded, this is their spokesperson saying, it is widely regarded as one of the safest herbicides ever developed, said a Monsanto spokesperson. I guess they still have Monsanto inside as a brand name inside a Bayer. So he says it's regarded as one of the safest herbicides ever developed. Are herbicides safe? I mean, is this what? Is this compared to Agent Orange, another Monsanto product? And then let's take a look at the disturbing trend of using robo-hounds. And as Caitlin points out, Caitlin Johnstone, she points out, that they like to put their police robots down low so they're not really big and imposing. They don't want to sell to the police these biped robots that look like humans. Instead, they want to sell smaller dogs that are on four legs and call them dogs because, they know that people like dogs. They don't feel as threatened in general by them. Of course, police dogs can be very threatening. But they don't feel too concerned about that. And so they're going to put them in a lot of benign areas right now so that we get used to it and accustomed to it. You better not. You better not. You better understand how this is going to be used. This is a conditioning right now. And so, as AP has pointed out, it's one of the reasons why Caitlin Johnstone wrote her op-ed piece, How Long Before the Humans Are Policed by Robots. AP is talking about how in Honolulu, they took money that they got from the Trump Pandemic Trust Fund, and this is how is being used all over the place. So the police bought robot police dogs with that money from the pandemic fund. So The way they're using it right now is the way that you have seen DARPA with its robotics contest essentially present the robots as they're going to help little old ladies across the street. Oh, yeah, sure. Or we're going to send them in to a Fukushima-type scenario so that we don't have to worry about humans being exposed to radiation. Well, that would be good, except it's not going to stop there. These are not Boy Scout robots. These are going to be military soldiers and cops as robots. And so they point out the way it's being used in Hawaii. So the cops got a lot of money from Trump. And if you want to, it says if you're homeless, says the AP, if you're homeless and looking for a temporary shelter in Hawaii's capital, expect a visit from a robot police dog that will scan your eye to make sure that you don't have a fever. Oh, who could object to that, right? That's great. Just one of the ways that public safety agencies are starting to use Spot, the best known of the new commercial category of robots that trot around with animal-like agility. And you've seen this, of course. You've seen the Boston Dynamics Spot. A handful of police officials experimenting with four-legged machines say that they're just another tool, like existing drones and simple wheeled robots, to keep emergency responders out of harm's way. But privacy watchdogs, and they mean that as a pun, warn that police are secretly rushing to buy the robots without setting safeguards against aggressive, invasive, or dehumanizing uses. In Honolulu, the police department spent $150,000 from their federal pandemic relief money. That's the stuff they got from Trump. It says pandemic relief was really a Pandora's box. It was a Pandora cash box is really what it was. What Trump did was he opened up a Pandora's cash box, and he pulled out of it all kinds of stuff, locking people down but putting them on a communist income, funding robot police dogs, you name it, right? And, of course, constructing the bioweapon vaccines that are being pushed out to the entire world right now. It wasn't a pandemic. It was a Pandora's cash box. And so what they're doing is they're using it to get robot police dogs. We haven't had a single person out there that says they're scary and they're worrisome. We just don't walk around and arbitrarily scan people. Yet. It's coming. And, of course, we've seen this in the New York Police Department. they got some of the Boston Dynamic robot dogs, Spots. They painted them up in blue and called it DigiDog. And they started going around using it as part of their police patrol. And people took exception to that. A lot of videos on social media, you might remember that a few months ago. One Democrat congressman, Jamal Bowman, said this is some RoboCop stuff. This is crazy. True statesman. But he got the idea. He was one of several New York politicians to speak out. After a widely shared video showed the robot strutting with police officers responding to domestic violence reports at a public housing building in Manhattan. Days later, after further scrutiny from elected city officials, the department said it was terminating its lease and returning the robot. Because, you know, when we look at this, what could possibly go wrong? Yeah, exactly. What could go wrong? This is from, you may remember this, Black Mirror. They called it Metalhead. And, of course, it looks pretty much exactly like the robo-dogs that are being done by Boston Dynamics. You know, the guys who did Black Mirror said, we're just going to stop it because what is happening right now is just too dystopian and it's just too dark for us to think about the near-term effects of all this stuff. Whether it's the robot dog or the rest of this stuff. And here he is. He's got all kinds of imaging software where he can track down an individual. We're going to talk about that because that's where these guys are headed. Yeah, she's fighting him off. So, yeah, if you haven't seen that, it's a great episode there. We're going to stop that at that point. But, of course, it's just plug and play. It's whatever you want. Said a competitor, Ghost Robotics. He says, you know, Boston Dynamics is trying to put a happy face on this because they're hypocrites. They've been doing this with military grants from the very beginning. As a matter of fact, you know, the DARPA competitions that got them going. He says, we'll sell anything you want. We'll put any kind of weapon on it, and we're selling it to the military, to the police, whatever, says Ghost Robotics. At least he's not being a hypocrite about it. We know exactly what this is. This is not even just the military-industrial complex. It is the police-state-industrial complex. And I've mentioned it many times before, but if you haven't seen or haven't read the book or heard the audiobook, listen to the audiobook by Suarez, which was Kill Decision, and it was about autonomous robot swarms and how they took artificial intelligence robotics and they and what they knew about how swarms communicate with each other. Instead of using pheromones, they used chemical signaling. And very, very interesting book. Anyway, Ghost Robotics has no qualms about their weaponization. They supply their dog-like robots to several branches of the U.S. military and its allies. It's just plug and play, anything you want. He says these stated ethical principles from Boston Dynamics are just selective morality. And it's about as true and as real as Google's slogan, "Don't be evil." Right? Oh, yeah. Steve Jobs thought that was real funny and hypocritical. And absolutely it is. So Caitlin Johnstone says the elites are seeking to normalize the use of police robots by calling them dogs, but the machines are the vanguard of a dystopian future that will see them cement their power forever. And here's what this looks like in Elysium. You know, Elysium, with all of its left-wing pushing of Obamacare and other issues. It had some very clear understanding of where these people want to go. You know, part of it was the high frontier near-Earth space stations that Gerard K. O'Neill talked about back in the 1970s. That was the name of his book, High Frontier. And it's a book that Jeff Bezos has referred to as seminal in his lifelong desire to create that exact type of thing. And as I've said before, Hugo de Garis believes that the elitists, the billionaires, these people who have locked us down right now, he said people are going to wake up to what they're doing, and he was talking about it just in terms of artificial intelligence, wake up to the dystopian future that they had planned and would start to resist, at which point these billionaires and the rest of the globalist elite would retreat to the kinds of space stations that are depicted in Elysium. And exactly, it's a computer model of what Gerard K. O'Neill had predicted he would do. In near-Earth orbit, well, actually not in near-Earth orbit. They put them in Lagrange libration points, which are gravitationally neutral spots between the Earth and the Moon, the kind of kidney-shaped orbit. They can stay there forever. It doesn't decay. So they showed that in Elysium. That was a place that they went to where everybody had this great lifestyle and so forth. But it's also their ability to weaponize their technology against us, those of us who remain on Earth. And as Hugo de Garis was talking about, he said, you know, he called that class of people the globalist elite. He called them cosmists. And he called the people, the rest of us, who remained here on Earth to be bullied by their technology, he called us the Terrans. And then this is how it looks with the robot police in Elysium. Remember this scene?
Morning, officer.
Extensive criminal history. Multiple felonies. What's in the bag?
Hair products, mostly. I'm just... Hey, I'm just going to work, man. There's nothing in the bag. Come on, that's what...
Misdemeanor, citizen, disobedience.
Just going to work, man. Come on.
Shit.
Nothing in there, is it?
Zero tolerance policy applies to all citizens.
Oh, shit.
You must report immediately to your parole officer. Thank you, citizen.
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your service, Officer Metalhead. As Caitlin Johnstone says, it's a known fact that Westerners tend to be a lot more sympathetic to dogs, so that's how we put them out there, because you don't want to be worried about what we just saw there, but that is exactly where this is headed. On the ground, robot policing is becoming normalized today, she writes, under the justification of COVID-19 precautions. And let me just say to you, If you have caught on by now, we're now 507 days into this. If you haven't caught on to the fact that COVID precautions are the magic incantation, the abracadabra that they wave over everything to suspend the rule of law, everything that civilization, Western civilization, has been able to craft out to protect the individual, all of that just goes away with the magic incantation, COVID-19 precautions. See, this is the second shoe to drop. After we had the false flag of 9/11, they could wave away any protections in the name of national security. And now this is really about individual safety, because we've got to have COVID precautions, right? So you just wave that magic phrase and you take it away. So whenever they say this is for COVID precautions, you better understand by now that what this is just a beard, or we could say a mask, for whatever it is that they always had planned on doing to create their dystopian society of 2030. So they say it's a justification of COVID-19 precautions, says Caitlin Johnson. In the same way that police around the world have normalized the use of drones to police coronavirus restrictions, at the same time, police departments are rolling out dystopian systems for predicting future criminality using computer programs and databases. And, of course, as they bragged about it before we started seeing these types of things happening, even before we had our lockdown, as I pointed out many times, you had mainstream articles from New York Times, Washington Post saying what they're doing in China with this biometric surveillance and the social credit system, that's pretty creepy. But you know, that's exactly what we need here as COVID precautions, and to do contact tracing and testing and to know what your disease status is. It's the testing aspect of it. It's these COVID precautions, but that's the justification again for what? For the Chinese system of surveillance, tracking, and control. And it will be used. This is going to be the boots on the ground, the metal boots on the ground. The French army is testing these spot robots for use in combat situations. Years after the Pentagon requested the development of a, quote, multi-robot pursuit system. Kind of like what we just saw there in the Black Mirror metal head. It's a pursuit system that can search for and detect a non-cooperative human subject, like a pack of dogs. As a matter of fact, let me just play this. You'll just hear the music if you're listening to this. I might narrate this a little bit. But this is the metalhead hunting people down. You get the idea, don't you? What we have here is the beginning of something designed to enable robots to hunt down humans like a pack of dogs once the software is perfected. We can reasonably anticipate that they will become autonomous and become armed. We can also expect such systems to be equipped with human detection and tracking devices, including sensors which detect human breath and the radio waves associated with the human heartbeat. These technologies are already developed. As a matter of fact, police can use the Wi-Fi in your home to image through walls already. That's been around for several years. For as long as there have been governments and rulers, says Caitlin Johnstone, there has been an acute awareness in elite circles that the public vastly outnumber those who rule over them and could easily overwhelm and oust them if they ever decided to. Many tools have been implemented to address this problem, from public displays of cruelty to keep the public cowed and obedient. Is that what we are not witnessing now when we have these demonstrations? As you see in Europe, just in Berlin, for example, we had over 600 people arrested. An amazing clip that I'm going to show you in a second here of the police beating an elderly woman. Got her down on the ground, It's like four or five cops, and you know, they're beating her as the people are filming it and saying, "What's going on?" I mean, they're already passive. These are just human cops. The number of people that are there, when they see something like that, they could easily overwhelm this if they wanted to. But they don't. They allow it to go on. This is literal Nazism. These people are literal Nazis. But, of course, we're seeing it in every one of these countries. We're seeing it in Australia. We're seeing it in France. And in Berlin, where this disturbing clip is, I'm going to show you in a little bit, you had just had 35,000 people marching, protesting Hungary, putting in laws to stop the sexualization of kids. And these LGBT pedos were demonstrating against another country's laws. And that was just fine with the Germans. Didn't have a problem with 35,000 people doing that as far as the so-called pandemic. This is exactly what we saw last summer. But instead, you know, when the people come out across political lines and saying, we just want to be left alone, we don't want to have passports, we don't want to have vaccine mandates coerced upon us, then they come out and they start beating people, arrested over 600 people. Because they have to keep the public cowed and obedient with public displays of cruelty. And they circulate propaganda. They have power-serving religious figures who help them in all of this. But at no time has any power structure in history ever produced a guaranteed protection against the possibility of being overthrown by their subjects who vastly outnumber them. That is our asymmetric advantage. That's why I say you should not worry about this. Not because we can overcome their technology if we have the will with a large number of people, but because it is really up to God. God is in control, and we need to understand that. And we need to understand that there's not anything that we're going to be able to do if we reject God. And that's why it disturbs me so much to see what is happening in the schools now. We're raising a generation that is not just godless, but hostile to God. And it's going to roll its way out in very disturbing ways if we don't change that. But we have the ability to change that. And again, as I've been saying over this whole last year, you know, why are people so suddenly afraid to die? You know, finally their understanding of their mortality, and that's a good thing. I had a pastor once who said, I'd much, much rather preach a funeral than a wedding because it helps people to get in touch with the reality of what's coming. People like to be able to imagine that isn't going to happen. You know, it's hard for any of us to imagine our own mortality, and yet we know that it's coming if we're honest with ourselves. And so over this last year, you had everybody completely freaking out. Wait a minute, I could die? It's like, no, wait a minute. You will die. The question that you should be asking yourself is, then what? Then what? And if you understand the answers to that, you're not going to be afraid of death. You're not going to look forward to it. Nobody's going to look forward to that. But it's an unpleasant thing, but it has no ability to totally control you. Right? Death, where's your sting? That type of thing. So the powerful have always been aware that robot and drone technologies can offer such protection for them. And you go back and you look at the history of arms control, going back to medieval England, for example. I've talked about how the yeomen would practice with longbows to the extent that you would see a difference in bone density with their left arm as they're holding that out. They would do it so much. A very powerful pull on it. But although they encouraged and even demanded that the yeomanry, the militia of the day, be proficient with a longbow, they prohibited them from having a crossbow. And because that was a little bit too much power for the ordinary people to have. If you had, everybody has a crossbow, man, that's, you know, same thing they do today with firearms in the U.S. But of course, in many countries, and the globalist plan is to just take firearms from everyone. According to a March report from the UN panel of experts on Libya, lethal autonomous aircraft may have hunted down and remotely engaged soldiers and convoys fighting for Libyan General Khalifa Haftar. It's not clear exactly who deployed these killer robots, though remnants of one such machine found in Libya came from the Kargu 2 drone, which is made by the Turkish military contractor. See, that's the other thing. very easy to proliferate these things. And this technology is going to spread very, very rapidly. It isn't going to be something that is held by just a few nations. Everybody is going to have this. This story that you probably saw yesterday, that is from The Drive, talking about the Pentagon is experimenting with using artificial intelligence to see days in advance. Let me tell you something. You don't need artificial intelligence to know where this is going, do you? The only way you can't see where this is headed is if you have a propaganda campaign by the government that causes you to miss information that you should be seeing. That's what they really mean by the misinformation campaigns, is really missed information. If you understand where this is headed, it's not really hard to see years in advance where our enemy is headed, right? Who is our enemy? Well, it's your own government, and it doesn't matter what country you're in, because every one of these governments on Earth has flipped to the statist side. It doesn't matter which political party. It doesn't matter what rhetoric they tell you about the free stuff they're going to give you or how they're going to protect your liberty. It's all just talk. If you look at what these people are doing, they have all signed into the global club. You know, they don't have these global meetings with Bilderberg and the rest of these on an annual basis for nothing, right? They're all breathing together. That's what a conspiracy is. They get together and they breathe together the same plan. You can see it in the UN. You can see exactly what they want to do. But, of course, this article is pretending that this is something that is new and special to them. It's been around for a very long time. When I talk about human domain analytics, and that's what we're talking about here, mastering the human domain, anticipatory intelligence, geospatial intelligence, that's all there. They're just working on their artificial intelligence, and they're working very hard to predict what people do, and it's not just the military. That's the other misdirection. Oh, okay, well, this is only something that's going to be done abroad in our unending, undeclared wars of aggression. No, no, no. They're turning that inward. And, of course, the founders of this country always said that would be the case, that the instruments of war abroad would become the weapons of terror at home, to paraphrase them, and that is exactly what is happening here. They want to achieve information dominance, decision-making superiority. How do you do that? Well, one of the key things that you do is you blind the enemy to everything that you're doing, and then you make sure that you can see and know everything that they're doing, whether you do it by infiltration, spies on the inside, some kind of fifth column thing, or whether you just crack into their code, like we did with the Enigma code of the Germans during World War II. AI machine learning tools tested in the experiments could someday offer the Pentagon a robust ability to see days in advance. Something like Minority Report. Of course, they keep talking about that, but anticipatory intelligence has been around for quite some time. Again, it's all part of the fastest growing part of this, which is geospatial intelligence, to look at your political, religious beliefs and other things and to map them geographically, so they can then draw conclusions about you. And you better hope that their algorithm doesn't target you as an enemy or somebody who is planning to do something in advance. Do we have due process anymore? Well, you might want to ask some of the people that I've interviewed over the years who are enemies of the state, people like Schaefer Cox, people like Marty Gottesfeld. You might want to ask Julian Assange if they get fair trials, if they get due process. You might want to ask the people associated with January the 6th what they think about being held in jail under torturous conditions, many of them beaten, for months without even having a trial. I mean, we have to talk about the levels of punishment, the levels of the terms of incarceration to determine whether it's excessive punishment. Shouldn't we think about that? But shouldn't you have to have a determination of guilt before you punish somebody pretrial? Now, we gave up on that a long time ago with the war on drugs. As a matter of fact, our current president, Biden, was very happy about the fact that he wrote the civil asset forfeiture where they take your stuff, do the due process later. Sounds like somebody else who said that too, right? Trump. But it was also Reagan who signed on to all of that, the mandatory minimums that filled up our prisons, the civil asset forfeiture, which allowed the police to steal stuff from people, large amounts of stuff, without ever even charging them with a crime, let alone finding them guilty. They never had any intention of ever giving them due process. They just took it. This is what our government has been practicing, and it's how they have been training you for decades, for decades. And now the guy who wrote all that stuff, who always hated the Bill of Rights, the very concept of natural rights, Joe Biden, is now in the White House. And I know he's not all there. What is left of Joe is in the White House. But let me tell you, what is left of him is not a kindly old grandfather. It's not a bumbling guy that his staff tells him he's got something on his chin and he pulls it out and then eats it. Did you see that clip? I was going to show that yesterday and I didn't show it. No, that is Joe Biden. But let me tell you, underneath, he is one vicious, calculating person, whatever is left of the original Joe Biden. But he's just doing the bidding of these people, as all of these politicians are, as Trump did. Trump is doing the bidding of his globalist masters. Ask yourself, again, you know, where did all this happen? It came from the money. Where did all of these vaccines come from? Well, you know, you had AstraZeneca was funded partially with some cash from the UK. However, he bought hundreds of millions of these doses. That made a big difference. Any other industry, that's all they ever get, is a big government contract for hundreds of millions of items. And that's enough. But no, we did more than that for most of these. We gave them money to do the research, money to do the manufacturing. We gave them legal liability protection. We delivered their stuff for them with the military. These shots, these Trump shots that are being spread around the world, were the kickoff of this global takeover, just like the shot heard around the world at Concord and Lexington. It was a Trump shot that's been spread around the world. He was their main man, and he got away with it because nobody could believe that a guy who had said so much about how he hated globalism could actually be the best puppet the globalists ever had. Machine learning and artificial intelligence can detect changes, and we can set parameters where it will trip an alert to give you an awareness to go take another sensor, such as a geoint on satellite capability, to take a closer look at what might be going on at a specific location. Again, anticipatory intelligence, human domain analytics has been around for decades. Not new. But it is, we're being prepared in many ways. Now they're talking about it openly, which means that they're already deploying it, and they're soon going to deploy it in your face in a large way. The death of commuting. This is an article from Zero Hedge. A person who grew up in New York City, said Upper West Side, Manhattan to be precise, in the 1960s and 70s. And this is Nick Colas of Data Trek Research. He said he really didn't like the streets. You know, he had to be very street savvy. He had to, as he's walking back and forth to school, he had to determine who was a threat and who wasn't a threat and so forth. And he said, sometimes we would visit family and friends who had moved to the suburbs. And he said, I always wondered why we couldn't live that way. It seemed a lot nicer. Trees, outdoor activities, backyards. It was like another world. When I asked my mom, why can't we live in a house too? Her reply was always, your father refuses to commute. He worked in midtown Manhattan, and he walked. And wanted to be able to wake up at 8 a.m. and be at the desk by 9 a.m., even if he had to walk. He goes on to say, commuting is an unalloyed negative for mental health. Well, this is a guy who never did it, evidently. I don't think so. Quite frankly, it's one of the things it's the only thing I really miss from InfoWars. I got to say that. It's the only thing I miss is the commute. It was quite fun in the morning when there was nobody else on the road, and I could get there in a third of the time. It was also an opportunity, even when I would have a long drive home, just to have a different mode. So instead of, you know, driving fast and having it be a challenge, I could just kind of kick back and I could listen to music or I could listen to an audiobook. And it was a time of, and I think that a lot of people understand that time in an automobile doesn't have to be wasted time. Even if you have traffic and congestion, and there were a couple of choke points on my commute home in the afternoon. Way I would cope with it, I found it to be very relaxing. I would just take the top down on my little car, and that changes everything, changes your perspective You know, there's something about being not sealed up in a car that is really nice. You know, you smell everything that's happened, good and bad. But growing up, it used to always be the case, even in Florida, didn't have cars with air conditioning. So you always had the windows down and were cruising around. And so, I don't know, there's just different ways that you can do it, just to relax, to have a different mindset, put some headphones on, listen to some music, like I said, or an audiobook. It's not a negative for mental health. This is coming from somebody who's lived in the city, who's pushing an urban agenda, who wants to make sure that we don't have any way that we can move around. Don't let them push you into this. You can still see the USA in a Chevrolet or any other brand that you choose. But they want those days to be over because that's the last thing that we can do to move around. They have choked off, literally put a mask on and choked out every other form of transportation to us this last year. The car is the last thing we have remaining. Goes on with it. He says, so this whole work from home phenomenon, he said, what people are missing is how much time is wasted each day and how much more productive we could be if we live at home. And as you know, if you've been working from home, the downside of that is that it never ends, right? It never ends. It's a continuous job. This has always been the plight of the housewife, and now it is the plight of anybody who works at home. It just never ends, right? There's something to be said, and it's worth that commute to have a dividing line of when you're on and when you're off. But, you know, he's pushing this as a good thing. We need to end commuting. We need to end it just for our mental health, not even to save the planet. And they're working very hard to end it. San Francisco is the latest example of how they're going to start charging drivers to enter downtown. This type of thing has been done throughout Europe, London, other places, to have areas where you have to pay extra money to get into them. Essentially, toll areas. Areas, and then they changed it from that to areas that you couldn't get into if you had a diesel or if you had a, you know, gasoline car is the next thing. You know, they're going to have ultra-low emission zones is what they call them in Europe. And so gradually they're carving it off. First it's a fee, then it is tied to restrictions based on the type of car that you drive, and then they just shut it down altogether. Everything that they're doing right now is to choke off our ability to move, our liberty to move. It's very much like what we're seeing in the economic spheres. The Operation Choke Point that was done by the Obama administration tried to deny banking services to people who retail stores and manufacturers of firearms and firearms accessories, right? King of the hill. But they tried to choke it all off financially, and that's what they're doing to our ability to travel and to move. San Francisco is calling it cordon prices. Charge people a flat rate every time they enter or exit a certain zone of the city. And pretty soon it'll be just a blanket. It's like $6.50 to enter the city center. And right now, to make sure that it is politically correct and to help to keep resistance there, and say, well, we're not going to charge that to poor people. It's only people who make more than a certain amount of money per year, $100,000 right now. Do you remember how the income tax started? I mean, income tax was imposed in 1913. They called it an income tax because it wasn't on wages. They didn't add wages until World War II, and it was supposed to be a temporary tax on wages. And then they forgot to take off that temporary tax on wages after the war ended. But at the beginning, it was only income, and it was only income that was very, very high. So it was, you know, in principle, they established the principle of the income tax. And, of course, they did it in a very underhanded way. I talked about that on the 100th anniversary of that, how they manipulated the passage of the income tax. But they began it as a, and people didn't complain about it because they didn't understand the principle. Well, this is only something that's going to affect the really rich people. Except it was the really rich people like J.P. Morgan that was putting that in there as a handmaid to the central banking, the Federal Reserve. And so, and also make sure that they moved from a system of taxes that were predominantly on imports tariffs at the border and make the taxes internal on Americans. That was the key thing, by the way, that President Thomas Jefferson talked about in his second inaugural address. He was very proud of the fact that he had eliminated all internal taxes and that the government was supported entirely by tariffs, by goods that came into. So inside America, it was a completely tax-free zone for everything as far as the federal government was concerned. He said, we've been able to do this because we eliminated unnecessary offices and things that the Constitution did not allow. So he said, you know, what farmer, what laborer, what mechanic knows the tax man? Nobody. That was his big accomplishment in his first term. And then they turned that whole system around in 1913, and they started cutting. That's when we started going to the globalist economy, you know, where they don't want to have taxes on imports and exports, but they want to tax the people in each individual country. That's where we are now. Congestion pricing is supported by some libertarians as an alternative market-based solution to transportation issues posed by traffic congestion. It's a way to disincentivize driving that is relatively non-invasive and still allows individual drivers to make decisions themselves. This is Reason magazine talking. People who call themselves libertarians, who have aligned with the libertarian think tank, the Cato Institute. And it shows you how clueless these people are. Absolutely clueless. It shows you how they will embrace these tactics of tyranny, even people who are very carefully watching politics and history and policy. They're supposed to know better than this. They're supposed to know about incrementalism. They're supposed to understand that government doesn't operate by persuasion. It is all about coercion. I mean, I've heard libertarians say that over and over again. You know, we like the free market because the free market is based on persuasion, whereas the government is based on coercion. The problem is that you can't make a clear distinction anymore between the government and the corporations because they have become, two heads on the same snake. And so they don't, either one of them, as we see over and over again. I mean, just look at all these woke corporations and what they're forcing down your throat. Whether it is speech codes or whether it is mandatory vaccines for their employees or even mandatory vaccine passes for their customers and masks for their customers. They don't care anymore about serving their customer. This whole idea that you're going to have business out there that is, okay, it's greedy, but even though it's greedy, it's going to serve the interests of the customer. And so that's a good thing. That was what Ayn Rand was trying to tell people, that greed was good because greed was going to, with competition, they were going to be competing for customers and they were going to do everything they could to please the customer. So that's good. And they would do it because of their own self-interest. The problem is that greed is not good. And these people will figure out that a shorter path to doing this, rather than trying to please every customer that walks to the door, is just to make a customer out of the government, to make an alliance with the government, and then you don't have to please anybody but the government. And that's where we are right now. So all of this idea that you're going to have congestion pricing and the government is going to, you know, somehow by pricing this, it's going to affect supply and demand. They're coercing supply and demand by putting an extra tax on the roads. What kind of twisted libertarian thinking is this that could endorse that? Reason and Cato Institute cannot think clearly anymore, whether it comes to choking off our movement, putting a mask on our face, a vaccine in our arm, or shutting down our speech on social media. They just can't think anymore. They've lost the plot. The plot is individual liberty. And they don't understand even which team the different players are on. Congestion pricing of entire freeway networks has been successfully used to relieve congestion in several cities around the world, writes Randall O'Toole in a Cato Institute policy paper. No, just take a look at what is happening with congestion. How do you relieve congestion? You build roads. You make them wider. Whatever. Or you make them multi-level. Even Elon Musk got that right. You know, he went with his boring project, tunneling. If you look at every futuristic sci-fi movie that's been made since they've been making movies back in the silent era with Metropolis, all the way up into recent times, where the you have multiple levels of transportation in cities. Why would that be? Well, just think about that. You've got buildings, these skyscrapers, that are getting more and more dense, and so they start building them up to get a higher density of occupation by people. But how are those people supposed to move around? On a horizontally restricted single plane, the road, it's not possible. And so everybody intuitively understands that. That's why it was always depicted that way in all of these sci-fi movies. They would have, at first, it would be multiple levels of flyovers that you see in some cities. Then it was literally flying in different strata, right? Different layers. Everybody's flying in their cars. But you have to have something that is multi-level in terms of transportation if your buildings are going to be multi-level. That's what Elon Musk pointed out. He said, so we're going to tunnel down to do it that way. If you don't do that, if you don't increase the capacity of people being able to move, you are designing a city that is set up to lock them down. And let me tell you, that is exactly what the cities of the smart cities of UN 2030 are designed to do. They're designed to lock you in place and to surveil and watch everything that you're doing. They don't want you moving around freely. You're too hard to control. And, of course, they're on this as well. Autonomous race cars now. Okay? let me tell you, the only way that I would ever be interested, this is going to be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They're going to have autonomous race cars. They're going to set up a competition, the Indy Autonomous Challenge, October this year. Well, that'd be great because, you can watch it in your little box at home and not have to go out and have any physical contact with people. Even the race cars won't have any humans in them to have any physical contact. So isn't that great? The sport of the future. No humans allowed except maybe a little bit of watching. This reminds me, DARPA kicked off the whole self-driving issue. That was their very first contest, was putting up a big pot of money and say, create a self-driving car. And we know where that is headed, the military stuff we've been talking about so far. The only way that I'd be interested in watching robot cars race is if they combine it somehow with Robot Wars, the cable thing. I used to watch that with my sons, where people would make these kludgy little robots and they would fight each other, try to destroy each other. So if you created some kind of a cross between, NASCAR and Mad Max, yeah, I could watch that. Otherwise, I'm not too interested in it. They said it could, and here's the bottom line. So they're going to put a pool there of $1.5 million, kind of like what DARPA did, right? It could wake up the average motorsports fan and the average citizen, said one person. He said they'll say, wow, if these cars can go 180 or 200 miles per hour without a driver, then maybe an autonomous car on the highway is something that I can feel comfortable with and safe using. Yeah, sure. Or, what you might wind up with is these cars that, these autonomous race cars at Indy, they might see the moon and stop because they think it's a caution light. That just happened with the Tesla. saw the moon and it thought it was a caution light. And speaking of Tesla, they had a battery fire burned for 3 days, which is not unusual. Whenever you have one of these cars, these battery-operated electric vehicles crashes, they typically do reignite for days afterwards. This, however, was a 13-ton lithium battery inside a shipping container. It was in a site about an hour away from Australia's second-largest city, Melbourne. There was one battery pack on fire to start with, but it spread to other packs that were very close to it. I'm surprised it isn't still going, frankly. The battery site, one of the largest in the world, is designed to store energy produced by renewables, and to send power to the grid. There you go. So we don't have to worry about the grid and renewables anymore, or do we? Yeah, talk about that in a second. But first, we're talking about power consumption, and there's yet another update to California and several of these other green states that are shutting everything down in the name of saving the environment when they banned the game computers. There's an update to that as well. But before we get to that, game computers and high-performance computers have been used for Bitcoin mining for some time. And, of course, the problem And this is still a concern about all the cryptocurrencies. They allowed this to roll out for quite some time in China, for example. This is a Zero Hedge article where they talk to an individual about the business, how he got into Bitcoin mining. And he had a very large business at its peak. He was producing 70 to 80 Bitcoins a day. Now, a few months ago, when Bitcoin was up around 60 grand each of them, we're talking about around $5 million a day he was generating, processing these transactions. That's what Bitcoin mining is. It's processing the transactions. So he's making about $5 million a day. And the way they put it, they said, he's making 70 to 80 Bitcoins every day. There's about 900 Bitcoins that are issued every day globally for people who are doing this work. So, he's getting pretty close to 10% of the world's production, this one guy. Even at today's prices, dropping that in half, he's still looking at, $2 to $3 million a day that he was doing. But what happened with all that? Well, the Chinese government just decided one day they would just turn it off like that, and they did it. And he says it's over. It's all over, just like that. Why did they do it? Well, because China wants its own central bank digital cash that they can put an expiration date on, that as the Europeans are talking about, they can limit where you spend your money, who you spend your money to. They can track everything that you do. They can confiscate your money at any point in time. And again, the digital yuan, it comes with an expiration date, so you cannot accumulate wealth. And so they just decided that they would just turn the switch off. A financial policymaking body chaired by Vice Premier Liu He specifically stated that the country will, quote, crack down on Bitcoin mining and trading. And suddenly, an issue after years when Beijing was all too happy to allow its domestic miners to make millions by keeping the Bitcoin ecosystem operational. They just turned off the switch. They let people get drawn into this. And let me tell you, in my view, that is what the internet has been. It's one of the reasons why I'm a bit skeptical about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. Because you look at the internet, and, I was one of the people, as I was getting involved in computers, one of the things that drew me to it was the decentralization nature that was happening as I got into it. Mainframe computers had been around when I was in engineering in college. We had a big IBM mainframe that was shared by two different universities. That one computer used by two different universities was doing accounting, and it was used for research, and it was used for students to do their projects on. And so you had this massive centralization. And the way that looked was that Karen and I would go in late nights, and I would sit there with a stack of punch cards. I mean, it's laughable to think about this anymore. Try to even explain this to people. you would have to go down. You would set it at the typewriter, and you would punch these cards. And, of course, there's no backspace if you make a mistake. So, I made a mistake, so I take that one out, put another one in. And you had to keep them in order. And you would get these big boxes of these things. And we'd sit there and watch people with big trays of, several different rows and, maybe a box that's a foot and a half long and multiple things. And they would feed these cards into the card reader. So first you'd have to go to the punch machines. They had about 16 of them in this one facility that I used. And about a quarter of them were always broken. I mean, they were mechanical nightmares. They had a guy from IBM always there wearing a white shirt and a tie. It didn't matter what time of the day you were there, there was always a resident IBM tech who was going to be fixing those punch card machines. And then, of course, running over to the card reader when it would jam as well. And so you'd watch these people, and they would have all these cards, and they'd be feeding them into the computer, and all of a sudden it would jam and eat a bunch of cards. And it was like, no! And then other times you would have somebody carrying the thing around, and they would drop it. And it's not 52-card pickup. It's more like a couple of thousand cards they got to get back into order now. What a ludicrous situation that was. And so I watched that. And I thought about the folly of centralized control. And about that time, you had the personal computer start to come out. And the idea that you could have autonomous, decentralized computing. And it was just an amazing epiphany, an amazing turn toward freedom. Then we started having the internet where everybody could get on and freely share information, and everybody started sharing information freely until they cracked it down. And then after the crackdown, I started thinking about it. You know, I was always so hopeful that these people, that the government was going to be essentially hoisted by its own petard, you know, blown up by its own bombs with the internet and the outbreak of freedom. But they'd thought this thing through. From the very beginning, the internet was designed by a psychologist. From the very beginning of the practical internet, as soon as the bandwidth became practical, you started having the CIA openly create its own venture capital firm. I've talked about this many times, how they funded these startups. They made sure, yeah, they were competitive because they wanted to make sure these guys were good at what they did. But just as we see for the political contests, the participants were already pre-screened to be controllable. And then you let them compete against each other. And yeah, that is real competition. You know, Biden and Trump really, and Hillary, they all hate each other now, right? They really do compete. But they were pre-selected. And when it comes down to the things that really matter, like we saw 507 days ago, there's really no difference between them. So when I look at all of this, and I look at what is happening with Bitcoin, as I see the internet now in the long game, I see it as a rope-a-dope, as a con game, luring us into with this promise of freedom and then shutting the gates and turning the gas on. And I think that same thing is going to be happening with cryptocurrencies. China lets this thing run. It's wide open, the Wild West, total freedom. And then one day they come in with a rubber hose, and it's not too hard for them to find out where these Bitcoin mining facilities are, right? They just look at the power consumption. They come in and they shut them down with a rubber hose, just a brute force. So now, you know, it has now moved to other venues in the West. As they point out in this article in Zero Hedge, everything changed since that May government meeting where they just turned the switch off. It came after global speculation boosted Bitcoin to an all-time high of nearly $65,000 in mid-April. The global average hash rate of Bitcoin, which is the total combined power being used to mine the cryptocurrency and the process transactions, dropped 48% from its historic peak on May the 13th by June the 21st, the day after the Sichuan government-mandated closures. And so this guy, who had been doing about 10% of the global mining, who has been making, you know, between $2.5 and $5 million a day, as he pointed out, everything went just as fast as it came. He said, that's it. It's over. It's all over. Just like that. Why are there new crypto rules in the infrastructure bill? You don't think that the government will do that here in America? They're already sneaking in crypto rules in the infrastructure bill. Crypto taxes are now infrastructure. This is an article by Reason. To authorize funds for federal aid highways, highway safety programs, and transit programs, and for other purposes, unquote. It's right there. It's 2,700 pages long, and there's a lot of other purposes in it besides authorizing funds for highways and highway safety programs. That's the way they always do this. One of the most notable non-infrastructure pegs relates to cryptocurrency. First, the good news. Cryptocurrency holders face no new regulations under the proposal. The pending bill does not create new reporting requirements for individuals, create new penalties for individuals, or impose any obligations on individual cryptocurrency holders at all, notes Forbes. However, it has a lot of new reporting requirements for any exchanges and brokers. All right. So what they're doing is they're putting in, essentially registering the transactions, a lot of reporting. Now, what does that look like? I've got an article here about how the UK wants to start registering homeschoolers. Why do you register guns? Why do you register homeschools? Why do you register financial transactions? It's so that you can confiscate. Not just control, but confiscate. You want to know where all these people are, and then at some point you're going to go in and take it. That's why you want to know. This isn't an inventory thing. They're inventorying their slaves, their cattle, and the things that they're going to eventually take. Under language tucked down on page 2433 of the 2,702-page long bill, quote, any person who for consideration is responsible for regularly providing any service effectuating transfers of digital assets on behalf of another person, any person will have to report each transaction to the federal government on an information return. The new rule will take effect January the 1st, 2023. And so they said, here's where the bad news comes in. The information reported by exchanges would give the IRS a new tool to go after individuals who don't fully or accurately report digital assets on their tax returns. And by strengthening tax enforcement on such digital assets, the federal government could raise $28 billion over the next decade. Let me ask you, is this about the money? These are people who just, this is a bill that's going to spend, depending on who you ask, it's going to be just under $4 trillion to over $5 trillion right now, immediately. But they could possibly raise $28 billion over the next 10 years? This is not about trying to pay for infrastructure. This is being put in for control. It's the reason why the central bank digital cash is being put in, for control. And also to make sure that they can destroy wealth so that we own nothing. The infrastructure bill does not list specific penalties for cryptocurrency exchanges, but it does amend the IRS code to include digital assets, quote, in the definition of what is included in an information return subject to penalty. Other things are in the infrastructure bill. A government broadband financing, they're calling that infrastructure, the information highway. As Reason points out, the government has a long track record of costly, corrupt failures when it comes to putting out government broadband. When Kentucky officials rolled out an ambitious plan in 2015 to build a government-owned broadband network that would span more than 3,000 miles, the price tag was $350 million. Let me pause here for a second and point out that it's $300 million that Greg Abbott gave to a contact tracing company that was a single office up in Frisco, Texas, a guy who had a fudged resume. Where did that money go? I mean, you want to talk about corruption, failure? Here's a Kentucky plan that's going to roll out infrastructure to the entire state. And they spent about the same amount of money that Greg Abbott with his box of Pandora cash that he got from Trump decided that he would hand this to some individuals. Anyway, this $350 million government broadband situation in Kentucky, as Reason says, was a big expense, but they promised that they would bring modern, high-capacity fiber infrastructure to a state with some of the slowest average internet speeds in the country. Businesses, schools, residents would benefit, and the full power of government behind it. The project, called Kentucky Wired, would be up and running by the spring of 2016. But 4 years later, an audit found that the still incomplete project had cost taxpayers at least $1.5 billion. Wait a minute, that's like five times the original, right? They spent five times, very much. So maybe it really is like infrastructure projects. This is what you see when they build a road or a tunnel. Not completed, 5 years later, it's five times what you originally budgeted. Thanks to cost overruns, big consultant fees, and a flawed bidding process that rewarded political connections, kind of like this company up in Frisco. We don't know who this guy is, what his relationship is with Greg Abbott. Instead of prioritizing expertise, problems that the opponents had warned about from the very beginning. But now the feds are preparing to throw another $65 billion into the black hole that is government-run broadband. The so-called digital equity grants would prioritize projects run by state and local governments or by nonprofit organizations. In other words, get ready for a lot more Kentucky Wired. Yeah, internet access is crucial for Americans to work and play, but so are grocery stores, so are car dealerships, but we don't expect the government to run those things. I would just say that when you look at what the government has done to our highways, how they've used them as points of control, how they're planning on using them as points of control, how they failed to maintain them, failed to expand them, that would be my argument against doing this for broadband. But you understand that this is not about helping you with your business, with your school, whatever. This is about controlling you. 5G is all about surveillance. I mean, there's also the health issues of it, but if you just look at the other side of it, it's very clear, based on the concern and the paranoia of government officials, as well as Chinese officials, they do not want the other, neither one of them want the other country's 5G being operated in their country. Why? Because it is full-on surveillance and control, and they know it. And you better understand that as well. Infrastructure bill is also going to give a lot of money to Amtrak, but at the same time, it's going to ban smoking on Amtrak, as Reason points out. A lot more money to Amtrak, but it comes with a lot more rules about behavior of passengers. Of course it does. And tucked into the 2,700-page bill is a clause that would ban smoking anywhere on an Amtrak train. The bill's text explicitly says that electronic cigarettes and other vaping devices would be covered by the ban. So this is an article by Reason Magazine saying that they're, look at this, they're going to ban vaping on Amtrak and so forth. Well, here's the situation, Reason. you had Trump's FDA. Remember, it was under Gottlieb, I believe. I think he was there most of the time. And it was when Gottlieb wanted to ban vaping. And Trump joined in on that, and then he got a lot of criticism about it. He says, that's the dumbest thing I ever did. But, of course, he didn't try to really undo it. But it's not so much about the smoking bans, which is what they talk about. And these are people who are approving of masks and vaccines, but they can't quite get on board with the vaping bans. Now, let me tell you, before we get to talking about whether or not you ought to have vaping or ban vaping on Amtrak, just ban the funding for Amtrak. I mean, wouldn't you think, since Reason is all about market-based stuff, that they would say, well, if Amtrak can survive, they need to start getting more on a customer orientation rather than living off of government handouts, because that is what turned Amtrak into the unresponsive, unusable disaster that it is. So that's the real issue. But they're focused on the politics of it, the Democrats versus the Republicans, and whether we're going to ban smoking or not. No, stop funding it. And then, as I said earlier, we're going to talk about what's going on, another update to this crazy California computer ban. And, of course, it's not just California. It's about five different states. But they do point out that California has the most jobs in the video game industry. More than 200,000 people employed either directly by game companies or working in supporting services of game companies. Washington State is the second one, close to 50,000 jobs. And, of course, I believe Washington State is another one that is trying to put limitations on computers that people can buy. And I've talked about this now a couple of days. I talked about it last week. And I said, just think about the power consumption of electric vehicles, battery-operated electric vehicles, that are, again, coming off of the grid that they're shutting down the power generation capacity. One thing after the other that they're doing to shut down power generation capacity. And so when we look at that, you've got computers that are being banned while you have electric battery-operated cars that are feeding off of the grid, and they're being heavily subsidized along with the charging stations that they're putting up. How does that make any sense? And so I looked at it a couple of different ways. I said, look at the peak power requirements, for example, of the top-of-the-line Tesla, because we're talking about top-of-the-line computers. So look at the Tesla Plaid. I said, look, it's got two 250-kilowatt motors, and you know that somebody buys a Plaid, they're going to step on it to get both of those things going at the same time occasionally and, smoke some tires or something. But take a look at its steady state power consumption, right? And that was something that was still orders of magnitude higher than the, and I forget what the number was, but it was still pretty high. And then I had a listener, after he heard that report, he said, well, here's the other way to look at it. Look at how they're, what energy they're using as they're charging. If you do it on a home charger, even if you do it at a faster charging rate where you can get the whole thing charged up over, you know, several hours. I don't know how many hours it takes to charge it, but let's say that it's, 4 to 8 hours operating off the 220. And if I recall correctly, that was about 12 kilowatts. So you're talking about 12 kilowatts, and you're talking about using that for 4 to 8 hours. How long would somebody be playing with a video game? 4 to 8 hours? Instead of 12 kilowatts, it was using 1 kilowatt. And yet they're going to ban that. I think that's probably the best way to look at this. And you point out that the fast charging stations were like 72 kilowatts, 72 times what a computer is going to use. Now, in a fast charging station, you're not going to be charging it for hours. It's better to compare it to, you know, what the other ones were. But I think even at the low 110 rate, it was something like 2 to 3 times what a computer would use. Whereas at the higher charging rate at home, it was something like 12 times. And the amount of time that it's going to take to charge it is going to be equal to or greater than. I think if you used it at the lower 110 level, you're going to be charging it for longer than you would probably be using your computer unless you just leave it turned on 24/7. And even then, you wouldn't use as much power during the day as you would charging your computer, your car each night. So what is going on with California? Why are they doing this? Well, again, I think this is intentional. They're going to use, it's a bait and switch, they're going to use the electric cars, they're going to use the idea of emissions, they're going to offer the carrot of self-driving, they're going to put all that stuff out there as a way to ban other types of transportation. And then they're going to say, well, we just don't have the grid capacity to even power these electric cars, so, you know, you're out of luck. California regulations are not as oppressive, but they're even dumber. They have unintentionally created an incentive to use more power. So this is a follow-up to this. When you look at the detail of it, it's just not, it's not just a flat-out ban on a 1 kilowatt power supply. They're actually incentivizing people to get more power-hungry computers. So they're banning computers under the regulations. The amount of power consumption that your PC is permitted is based on how expandable your system is. So the more you're able to upgrade your computer through graphics cards, additional storage, memory, etc., the more energy you're allowed to consume. But since the smaller, simpler computers hit their energy consumption limits much more easily than expandable computers do, the rules are actually encouraging people to get bigger computers that consume more electricity. There you go. So, again, just keep that in mind. Understand that when they can establish the precedent, and again, they're going to do it off on a side thing. A lot of people are going to look at this and say, well, I don't have a really high performance computer that's using a lot of power, so this rule doesn't affect me. You know, this is, the income tax is applied to only the 1% of the 1% in 1913, so it doesn't affect me. Let me tell you, they're going to tell you that you can't have air conditioning. They're going to tell you eventually that you can't have electric cars. Because they're also like a bunch of gremlins out of a Twilight Zone episode. They're deconstructing the power grid at the same time they're putting these limitations on people. It's unbelievable. But here's something even crazier. Trump says, writes out a statement that says, if I were president right now, and I could not believe this when I saw it. If I were president right now, with COVID raging back, people being shot and killed in record numbers all over our cities, and the border totally open with criminals and heavily infected COVID people pouring in through our southern border and into our communities, the fake news media would be having an absolute field day. When I left, law enforcement was supported like never before. The border was strong and safe and secure. Was it? Yeah, he built a little bit of a wall there with about a 2,000-mile door in it. Only in his imagination. And I got a highly effective vaccine developed in less than 9 months. And it was supposed to take 5 years or more. That's right. If it was done with any kind of safety or precaution, it would have taken that long. Trump. Chump. And so, you know, he says, never forget. You know, I got this done so quickly. And so I retweeted that part of it yesterday. I said, we will never forget. And we will never forgive. You know, the motto from Anonymous, we will never forget you, Trump, and we will never forgive you for what you did to our country. Nobody has betrayed us worse than you. I said, the buck stops with you. And then as he's bragging about that, I also tweeted out, I said, when Trump whines about people being shot and killed in record numbers, is he referring to his Operation Warp Speed vaccines? Because people are being shot and killed in record numbers with his shots. Going to ignore that. He's still going to crow about that. I said, no, his statement continues with him bragging about big pharma corruption. I said, he's either the dumbest man to ever live or the greatest traitor to this country since Benedict Arnold. And so then the question becomes, from the AP, will Trump be the spoiler for the California GOP? Now, prior to Larry Elder jumping in, you didn't have anybody who was a real contender against Newsom. Larry Elder is very articulate. He's kind of a libertarian-leaning conservative. He's a black man, so that checks intersectional boxes. That helps to inoculate him a little bit from the crazy left in California. But he's solid. He's a solid guy. He's got one problem. That's his Achilles heel, and that's Donald Trump, because he's supported Donald Trump. And that's what they're saying. You know, other than, you know, when you look at the other candidates, and you have Bruce Jenner, who is a joke. You have this millionaire who is funding his campaign again, Cox. And he lost to Newsom. He was the Republican candidate who lost to Newsom in the first place, pretty badly. And so now he's got a plan that's going to work this time. He's touring California with a trained bear. That's right, a trained bear. It's a circus show, and freaks is what is in California. And, you know, even in the Republican Party. So when you have somebody like Larry Elder, who has who's articulate, you know, he's talked and debated politics for a living for a long time, it really is the biggest weapon that Newsom has against him is anything that he said positive about Donald Trump. Newsom's chief political strategist routinely tweets a 2019 photograph of Republican candidate Kevin Falconer, the former San Diego mayor, shows a picture of this Republican candidate beside Trump at his desk at his Oval Office. I think it'd be hard to pitch yourself as a national kind of Republican with Trump still exercising broad influence, said one person. Other top Republicans were also Trump supporters last year. You know, Elder has, you know, he seems to be solid except for his support of Trump. And again, they think that's going to come back to bite him. We have to look at what people do instead of what we wish they would do or what they said they were going to do. Finally, an alternative to PayPal may be coming out. This is coming from Gab, and it's Andrew Torba talking about how, you know, he's had to go it alone. He was kicked out by all these different payment platforms, kicked out of banking services, couldn't accept charge cards and so forth. They did find a way to fund and to get back on. So he is determined. He knows how to do this. So I'm hoping he's going to get this through. He's saying that he's going to set up Gab Pay, which will be an alternative to PayPal. And I certainly do wish him luck, since we have been already purged by PayPal. I just don't know how he gets that fed into the system. But again, he knows what he's doing, and he has a good track record. And so I hope that Andrew Torba can get Gab Pay. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with America Held Hostage. Stay with us. The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
All right, and yes, welcome to the APS Radio listeners. Again, you can find news. He's got music channels there at APS Radio. Also news channels, and so you can find us on the news tab, of course. And welcome to those who are listening on aftermath.fm. That's Clyde Lewis's format to you can listen live there, but also if you want to get the app, there's a lot of documents and archive programs. He set that up to make sure that his stuff wasn't memory holed like mine has been. So that's a good place for us to be as well. And then also welcome to all of you who are listening on DLive and Trovo. Those are our video live video feeds, as well as Twitter. I just don't know how much longer I'm going to be on Twitter when I look at what is happening as I escalate all this stuff. I'm not going to change whatever I say. I don't. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. And if they want to kick me off, they'll kick me off. I'm surprised that I'm still there, quite frankly. Welcome to all of you. And, of course, don't forget to go to thedavidknightshow.com. That's where you'll see where the video archives are right now on the alternative platforms such as BitChute, YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. And you should go there because you can't always find the program under the name David Knight. For example, on Rumble, it is under Roundtable Report. And then finally, you can find the podcast links, and we have one less podcast now, and that is Spotify. They kicked us off without any notification, without any explanation. I mean, you at least when you get censored by YouTube and by Twitter, they give you they tell you that you've been kicked off. They don't necessarily give you a reason or an explanation, but they do tell you that you've been kicked off. There's no reason or explanation given, and they don't even tell you you've been kicked off by Spotify. But we're on a lot of other places, iHeart, iTunes, Google's Play, and a lot of much smaller places there. And, of course, you can always go to Podbean or to Spreaker, where the podcast actually resides, and you can listen directly from there as well, you know, or you can get it through iTunes and things like that. So take a look at thedavidknightshow.com, and you can also see there how you can support us before we get gab pay. And again, I hope that Andrew Torba gets that through. It is something that is needed. I have a follow-up to a story that I read yesterday. This is from a person who was a respiratory therapist for 20 years. Name is William. And he says, I took care of hundreds of patients on ventilators. And, of course, this is a story about how the media is using the death of the man who got a severe sunburn, sun poisoning. He kept going back and forth to the emergency room. He was very sick, having chills and all these other things, and, you know, very, very sick. Eventually, he got a bad cold. They took him back. They tested him positive with a PCR test. And then they started giving him different treatments. When they put him on a ventilator, put him in an induced coma, and put him on a ventilator, he died. And so this is a response from a person who is a respiratory therapist. He said, it wasn't necessarily the ventilator per se that kills. He said, it's the high concentration of over 60% oxygen that is used for extended periods of time to keep the patient's O2 levels compatible with life. And so this is happening a significant amount of the time with ventilators. But, of course, they could do this with other measures as well. He says, you can go up to 100% oxygen for short term on a ventilator, but anything over 60% for more than a day can result in adult respiratory distress syndrome. One of the major complications is a collapse of the alveoli where O2 and CO2 diffusion takes place. This requires higher and higher pressures to ventilate with the same amount of volume. This is probably why you see a lot of the nurses saying we blew their lungs out, right? We're giving them too much oxygen, causing secondary problems, and then they keep increasing the pressure. This, along with the high levels of positive and expiratory pressures, to use less O2 eventually reduces cardiac output and blood pressure. Lowered ventilation and blood perfusion in the lungs eventually results in death. And there's no reversing this condition, not just death, but the... Actually, there is a reversal for death, but we'll talk about that another day. Obviously, that man was not diagnosed properly until it was too late. And I would just say, you know, it still is, you know, the being turned away multiple times, this thing getting progressively and progressively worse, and ignoring what many people have had as safe and effective treatments because they're cheap. I've talked many times, you know, about that particular case that was, you know, got a lot of national exposure, even in mainstream media, because it was an 80-plus-year-old woman who was on a ventilator. They told her, they said, told the family there was no chance for her. And the family finally convinced them, said, can you give her some ivermectin? They gave her ivermectin, and she's up, sitting up in her bed in a day or so. Instantly turned around. And it's not the first time we've heard that story. But then when they wanted more of that same treatment, the hospital refused at that point. What? You mean somebody could get, we could show that this cures somebody? We're not going to do that. And maybe somebody who, you know, it was probably a nurse who said, sure, we'll give it to them. And then somebody who's part of the hospital bureaucracy says, no, 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 we don't give anybody ivermectin, not in this hospital. You know, that's part of the game. We don't do that. So they got an emergency lawsuit together and got an emergency order from a judge saying, no, you must give her ivermectin. And they said, well, we're not going to give it to her. You will allow a physician to come in and give it to her, but we're not going to give it to her. That's how adamant they were about that. So this is financially incentivized medical malpractice. I even talked about how in the UK they had multiple people who had died, wait for it, because there had been, first of all, a medical instrument that was sewn up inside of them during an operation. That happens. And they were told that they couldn't get that taken out for a while because they had to reserve the beds for COVID. And so the people died. Now, you talk about financially incentivized medical malpractice. I mean, it's just all over the place. People being turned away even with surgical tools inside of them. This is a vaccine question from a listener. He said, the question about the vaccines, I have not heard anybody ask. If the unvaccinated are making the vaccines less effective now, after hundreds of millions of people have been vaccinated, then how were they so effective during the trials when no one outside the trial was vaccinated? That's right. That's right. You know, they were, first it was, we're 90% effective. The next day the Russians say, we're 93%. Then the next week you had Moderna, that was Pfizer who said that, 90% effective. The next week Moderna comes out and says, we're 94% effective. And the very next day Pfizer comes out and says, oh, we just looked at our data again, we're 94.5% effective. It's total nonsense. Total nonsense. But again, you know, when we were told that they were 100% effective, but now they can't be effective if everybody else is not vaccinated. So that's a good point that Mark makes. Thank you, Mark. Very good point that, you know, now we're told, you know, at the very beginning of this, when it was in the so-called clinical trial that lasted 2 or 3 months instead of 5 years, Trump is so proud of that. But in that short, abbreviated, quote-unquote, clinical trial, which is not a clinical trial, but anyway, in that trial, they said, look, you know, 90 to 95% effective. And how could that be if nobody else was vaccinated outside that little group of tens of thousands of people? But now that you've got millions of people vaccinated, now we have to fear the unvaccinated, right? We have to fear the unvaccinated. None of this makes any sense because, you know, they're just lying. They were lying about those numbers, obviously. It was just a one-upsmanship. They're making that stuff up just like they made up the stuff about the cases. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Delta stuff, you need to ask them, when did you get that Delta test? And are you taking everybody's sample that comes in and are you running it multiple cycles to say, is this the original? Is this Delta? Is this Epsilon, Gamma, Lambda, Mu, Nu, Omicron? whatever. You know, which one of these strains is it? Are you taking each one of these samples and running it multiple times to determine which? Do you know these sequences? Do you have a test for the Delta? Or is this just a clinical diagnosis? Just a best guess? No. I mean, they came immediately. You know, they had the test for the Delta, they want us to believe. And as soon as their vaccine started failing, it was like, oh, it's the Delta variant that's come in. No. They, if anything, what we're seeing here are adverse reactions from the vaccines. As a matter of fact, I had this sent to me. It's UK data that was referred, and this is coming from Vicky. Thank you, Vicky. I'll just say first name. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. This might be somebody whose job is in the medical community. Anyway, they found this data coming out about the Delta cases. And it's kind of interesting because they looked at it, people under 50 and people over 50. They should have made it over 55 or over 60 because that's really where we're starting to see, you know, the people under 50, you don't see under 55 or 60, you really don't see, statistically it's zero. People are dying there. And so it goes up rapidly with age, beginning at about 55 or 60, your risk from this. And so, again, it is a relabeling of the actuarial table, a relabeling of comorbidities and old age risks, really, in my opinion, of what we've seen from this. But, you know, there are people who are getting sick, and this particular illness is very deadly for people who have comorbidities. But there are treatments for it, but we're not allowed to give these treatments because they're being financially incentivized not to give them those treatments, to give them other things. But what's interesting about this data is that although they break it down below 50 and over 50, they broke the people down that, first of all, they had the number of cases for these different ones, and then they had the number of deaths for these two different age groups. Now, the number of cases as well as the number of deaths were further broken down by people who had who were less than 21 days after their first dose, or they were more than 21 days after their first dose, or they had gotten their second dose. So they break them down into those three categories. And then they have the unvaccinated in a separate category. And it's a little bit hard to go over the numbers orally here, and I know we have a lot of people who listen to this. So I'll just kind of give you the summary here. What was seen out of this when I went through and I looked at the percentages, because as you pointed out, there's a trend here, and you can immediately see the trend. People who were over 50, for example, the people who were only 21 days out from getting their first dose, they had 157 cases. And then if they were between 21 days and their second dose at 30 days, it jumped from 157 cases to 5,300 cases, 5,289 to be exact. And then it jumped again, big jump for the people who had already received their second dose. They had 13,427 cases. You see a trend here? You're seeing a trend that the longer it's been and the more vaccination, you know, the more time and the more shots that these people have had, the more cases that they've got by a significant amount. And so when you look at the total number of cases that they reported here, it was for the over 50s, 0.8% of the people who had been vaccinated with the first dose, but it was less than 3 weeks. But then that jumps to 28% for the people after they get 21 days. After that vaccine has been circulating in them for 21 days, it jumps to 28%. And then after they get their second dose, that was 71% of the total people who had cases. And it's even more pronounced when you look at the deaths. You had two deaths for those who were less than 21 days out from their first dose. And that's 0.7% of the cases. For people who were more than 21 days but hadn't got their second dose at 30 days, then it jumps up from 2 cases to 57 cases, and it goes from 0.7% to 20% of the cases. And then when you look at people who've gotten their second dose, that was 79% of the cases. 220. Now, I would look at this and I would say that it appears to me that the vaccine is increasing your risk of getting this, and it is increasing your risk of dying. And, you know, when you compare it to the unvaccinated, again, I'm not going to look at those. I mean, the numbers are not all that much different between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. But it's hard to be able to compare that for a couple different reasons. We don't know what the total population is of both of these, number one. But number two, we have seen here in the United States, the CDC has arbitrarily set a very different standard for cases of people who are vaccinated and people who are unvaccinated. They only count the vaccinated if they're in the hospital or if they're dead, and that's what we're seeing here. But I don't know if the unvaccinated, if it's the same thing, if they only count are only counting people who are hospitalized or people who died, because in the U.S. they're counting the unvaccinated even if they're asymptomatic, and they're testing them with a cycle threshold of 40, whereas I think the cycle threshold was, I'm forgetting the numbers now, it was somewhere 25 or 26 or something for the vaccinated, but I remember that it was 5,000 times more magnification for the unvaccinated than it was for the vaccinated. And again, they would count the vaccinated even if they weren't sick. But they would only count, even if you were very, very sick, if you were not in the hospital, if you did not die, it didn't count for the vaccinated. So not comparing the vaccinated to the unvaccinated in this, because there's too many different issues here. However, it's pretty clear that the risk of getting sick increased dramatically over these time periods. Again, 3 weeks out and then between 21 days and the second dose at 30 days, and then people who had gotten the second dose. Those are three different groups. So for the people who get sick, who had cases, let's just say, it was 0.8% in the first time frame. It was 28% in the second time frame, 21 to 30 days. And the people who had gotten the second dose, it was 71%. And similar thing happened with the people who died. It was only 0.7% who died 21 days after the first dose. Then between 21 days and the second dose, it went up to 20%, and then it went up to 79%, essentially 80% for the people after they got the second dose. Does that make you concerned? It ought to make you concerned. This is another listener who said, my sister's Facebook post. She said, I was discussing the state of churches with my sister, specifically the fact that some pastors are standing against masks and COVID injections, etc., while others are promoting vaccines. She showed me a post that she had put out on Facebook, which I think is thought-provoking. She asked us a series of questions. When did God's hand become so short that he would not heal? When did man's heart become so filled with fear that he refused to believe? When did the immune system, designed by God, become insufficient? When did it become okay for believers to welcome aborted human fetal tissue cells into their body? When did our life on this earth become more important than our consecration to God and his plan? When did we decide to listen to all the rhetoric and silence the still small voice, you know, of your conscience, for example? Or the Holy Spirit. When did science truly cure cancer, the common cold, or anything with its potions and its rituals? When did a 99.8% survival rate cause a worldwide pandemonium? When did an experimental biological agent become a, quote, tested vaccine? And when did a brother in Christ become an enemy? Just asking for a friend. That's very good. Thank you, Dan. And, I would say, you know, when we come to medical advice, we need to be charitable with each other. We need to understand that either one of us could be wrong. We need to respect the fact that we have informed consent. I guess the thing that bothers me so much about this is I talked about it yesterday. I talked about Franklin Graham. I talked about Max Lucado, very well-known figures who've made a lot of money. As Christian authors and CEOs and stuff like that. And then the listener's letter talking about how the Catholic Church that she attended to would not attest to her moral issues with these vaccines. And so she wrote them a letter of, rebuking them for that. But, it went through the whole hierarchy there locally. But, you know, when we look at people who are going to push something like that, it bothers me because First of all, they're not authorities on that issue. They're relying on authorities that are not showing their data. And they're pushing something that is taking away our ability to choose what we want to take. And the other thing that bothers me about this is that you typically see the people who are cheerleaders for the vaccines in churches are usually the ones who locked their churches down for the entire year last year. You know, some people didn't do it at all. Some people did it for a while, and then it's like, you know, I don't see any out of caution and trying to be good citizens and neighborly and so forth. They shut down out of caution, and they start looking around and say, yeah, I'm not seeing this. As I said many times, you know when there's something going around in a group of people that you're associated with, whether it's in a church or whether it's in a homeschooling group or somebody, you have a stomach virus that's going around. You know that. You know that pretty quickly. So they knew that nothing was really going around. And then when I think the thing that really kicked off was in July when they started saying, well, you know, you can get together in limited numbers. You stay apart 6 feet. You wear the mask, but then you still can't sing. They said, all right, we're done with this. At some point, you got to ask yourself what your priorities in life are. At some point, you got to ask yourself, am I dead already if I live like Fauci and the globalists want me to live? Am I dead to Christ if I value my life on earth so much that I can't obey a simple thing like getting together with other people? Do I hate other people so much that I fear being close to them because I might get sick? And I talked about the situation when I was young. I got ptomaine poisoning, and they thought that I had meningitis, very contagious, very fatal. So they put me in isolation. It took them about 3 days to figure out that I had ptomaine poisoning. That's another one of these incidents when I look back on it in retrospect, it's like, oh, okay, so I should just do everything the doctors tell me. So they put me in an isolation ward, and I'll never forget the pastor. They wouldn't let my parents in, but they would let the pastor in, and he wasn't worried about getting meningitis. You know, the doctors and nurses were worried. They were wearing all kinds of stuff and everything, you know, hoping that their little cloth mask would protect them, which it wouldn't. But he comes in without a mask, you know, just to talk. So, what is it? What is it that he wasn't afraid of? Why? Why wasn't he unafraid? Why is he unafraid? We need to think about that. And we need to think about, and I began today with this dystopian stuff, because I saw this picture. You know, this has been going on in Australia for a while. And when I tweeted this out this morning, I incorrectly put that the thugs, the uniformed, jackbooted, black-uniformed, armored thugs that were beating an elderly lady as they had her down on the ground, beating her, and it was filmed. I put down that they were from Australia, because I've seen this kind of stuff happening in Australia, but it is actually from Germany. And I tweeted it out yesterday and said, these people are literally Nazis. Literally Nazis. I saw that and it bothered me so much. And then, you know, I got off on this dystopian subject today of where this is headed. Because, you know, they're working on the tools to get the human equation out of it. At some point, you're going to have enough of these people have basic humanity rise up in them. They know this is wrong. I know they know it's wrong. You know they know it's wrong. There is a basic understanding of every human being, what is right and wrong. There's other things that you don't know unless you get the information from the Bible, which I believe is God's word, and I can support that intellectually. But that's going to give you a little bit more detail and understanding about some things. But we all have basic things. You know, when you look at it from a political science standpoint, the Libertarian Party would talk about it as nomos, kind of natural law. And most societies would say it's wrong to kill, it's wrong to steal, it's wrong to rape. And, you know, there's certain things like that that everybody gets, right? You don't have a separate code out there. You have to have a different code that says you will not go 35 in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. That's a different kind of law. That's kind of an arbitrary prohibition. But there's certain moral codes that we all understand intuitively. Now, we can, in the society that we grow up in, the society can remove those, that basic understanding from us so that we think that it's okay to steal, we think it's okay to rape, or we think that it's okay to even be a cannibal, for example, right? Because you grow up that way, and those basic ideas that you're born with as a human being, that God gives you that understanding, that is drilled out of you. And then you wind up with a conscience that's been seared, like with a hot iron. It's like you cut off that pain that is built in when you do the wrong thing. So when we look at this, there's a conditioning that is happening with some of these people now. That's a part of this. That's part of this gradual, slow process of 507 days. That is a part of it, is to train these people, these jackbooted thugs that are beating people on the street in Australia and in Germany. It's to train them. It's to sear their conscience. And, of course, it is to strike fear into your heart as well, with a public display of brutal violence against people who are doing the kinds of ordinary things that we celebrated as part of our common civilization just 2 years ago, or just 507 days ago. So there's a training period that is going on. But let me tell you, eventually you're going to have a situation where it can be reversed. And we've seen this behind the Iron Curtain. You know, you had people who would shoot those who were trying to escape from East Germany, the guards on the wall. And that went on for quite some time. And after that had been going on for, you know, 70 years or so, well, not 70 years, they had that dropped in the 60s. And then the whole thing collapsed. About 25 years later, I guess, what was it, 1961 or 62, we had the Berlin Wall, and then it all kind of fell in 1989. So, you know, 25, 27 years later, that collapsed. How did it collapse? Well, it collapsed because they started having people gradually start to meet together, candlelight services, singing at some local churches, and then they would march and do some things like that in a limited way, and it kept building in terms of the number of people. And then one day, the big group of people lit their candles and sang, and they marched toward the wall. And the guards didn't have the heart to shoot them. That's why they have to have the robots. That's why they have to have the autonomous robots. Because no matter how long you live under that kind of system, God can still change hearts. Even to people who were born and raised in that system, even if their basic humanity has been drilled out of them and their conscience has been seared. So that's why they have to have the robot dogs. But here's what the humans are doing right now. Helicopters deployed, military going door to door in Australia. Beachgoers on Gordon's Bay near Sydney were caught by surprise recently when a police helicopter flew overhead, blaring its sirens, issuing a warning for everyone to go home or be fined for breaching the stay-at-home lockdown restrictions. The country's current provisions require Sydney residents to stay within 3 miles of home, according to Reuters, and the only those who receive COVID tests every 3 days are authorized to perform essential work outside of that radius. They will decide what is essential. Isn't that insane? Writes WND. What about the long-touted vaccines? What about people who have natural antibodies? Should they be treated the same? This isn't about a disease, and we know that by now, right? Better yet, what qualifies the oligarchy to make decisions for everyone, regardless of personal risk, COVID history, or the livelihoods at stake? Who gets to decide what is essential or not? And again, you should ask that question to your idol, Trump, if you're still in that cult. What gave him the authority to imply and to financially incentivize people who are determining that what you do is not essential? Well, it is essential if you have to do it to support your family. Australia has bolstered its other COVID-related protocols, going so far as authorizing police forces to shut down non-compliant businesses, to fine dissenting civilians, and demanding that residents wear masks even in outdoor settings. Just when we thought the stringent attempt to rein in civilians couldn't get any worse, the U.S. Sun reported on Sunday that the country has deployed soldiers and military helicopters to help enforce its restrictions. Again, remember that in Australia this year, they've had, depending on who you look at, they've had zero deaths from COVID, or one or two. But because they still have the PCR thing and they're still getting some positive tests from their PCR game, their strategy that they've embraced, zero COVID, says we're going to keep doing this until there's not a single sniffly nose anywhere. In other words, we're going to do it forever. Never going to stop it. It'll never stop. This is all about the zero COVID strategy. Police will crack down on any dissidents and slap them with a fine of about $500. Some residents aren't taking the totalitarian push lying down, however. Just last week, protesters gathered for an anti-lockdown protest in Sydney. The incident turned violent. It prompted police to respond by blocking streets to prevent any further disruption on Saturday. And let me just say, you know, when you see Sky News in Australia being banned by YouTube, that is coming from this government. YouTube is the handmaid. YouTube will do whatever the Chinese government tells them to people in China to stay doing business there. They will do whatever the Chinese-style now Australian government will tell them to do to stay doing business in Australia. And they will do whatever the U.S. government tells them to do. And what they are doing here in terms of censorship, deplatforming, memory holding of people like me, you know, they've completely purged me essentially from Google search, not just YouTube. They will do that at the behest of the government, just like they're doing for Sky News, just as they're, you know, handmaids for the Chinese communists. Approximately 300 unarmed military officials will work in conjunction with the Australian police in a door-to-door effort to ensure that residents who have tested positive for COVID-19 are staying at home. And then, as WND correctly points out, after obtaining an inch of power, they will quickly prompt the push for a mile of it. And that is exactly what we've been seeing for the last 507 days, financially incentivized with this pandemic Pandora's box of cash that Trump helicoptered out to everybody. Listen to this statement by a woman, a 78-year-old widow. She said, "This is not the country that I grew up in. America is not the country I grew up in either. None of these places are. And this is happening to us globally. And I'm telling you that everything that you see happening in Australia, what you see happening in Canada, what you see happening in France and Germany, this is a global agenda. And the only reason that you're seeing a difference here, and I've said this before, the difference between country and country, the difference between Republican and Democrat-controlled states is what you will put up with. We had Republican governors left and right putting on mask mandates like Abbott did here in Texas because they knew that you'd put up with it. They were shutting everything down, but then he carved out an exception for people going to church here in Texas because he knew that was going to get him in trouble. He knew that would create resistance and pushback. It's not because Abbott was a nice guy. And oh, by the way, it shows you that he didn't believe any of the other regulations anywhere else. There's no reason that you're not going to get just as sick in church as you would going to a restaurant, for example. So he didn't believe the science. He didn't believe Fauci, or he wouldn't carve out exceptions like that. He was carving them out simply because he didn't want to push people too hard because they would push him back. And it's time we push these people back. And we push them back by living our lives. Because this is what's coming up. I'm a 78-year-old widow who chose to exercise in the Sydney Central Business District on Saturday. I wore a sign saying, quote, "Not happy, Gladys." I was alone, I am fully vaccinated, and I was wearing a mask. I was stopped by the police and asked what I was doing. I said I was exercising within 10 kilometers of my home. They told me that I was not allowed to wear a sign while exercising. Both they and I were very respectful, but I was arrested on the grounds that, as I did not normally exercise in the Central Business District and was wearing a sign, I was protesting and not exercising. Let me say this. A protest is an exercise of your God-given liberty of free speech, that we've always recognized that in Western countries. But our values, you know, we've had the Magna Carta, we've had the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Charter of Rights in Canada, all of that has been swept aside by what? By this military-industrial complex that is controlling all these countries. You know, you look at the U.S., Australia, Canada, New Zealand, U.K., Five Eyes. Each of these countries are now run by their secret intelligence agencies, and they are conspiring together to take away everything that we have been able to build in our civilization over thousands of years. Everything. Being erased in a single movement by people like Trump. She said, this is not the country that I grew up in. And the really sad thing is that there will be so many who have been intimidated into cringing cowardice and who will just say of me, stupid old biddy, she serves her right for not being obedient. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that is the thing that threatens them most. See, this is not about a virus. It's about tyranny. They didn't have a problem, and there's no health reason whatsoever for them to arrest her. They arrested her because she's protesting. She's protesting their authoritarian procedures. Now, this is the one that I was thinking of when I tweeted out this morning, said it was Australia, but of course, last night I tweeted out and got it right. It is Germany. These are literal Nazi police officers in Germany. Just take a look at this. This is in Berlin. As police attack people who are protesting the authoritarian, totalitarian lockdown. This lady's on the ground. Look at that. She's got three cops holding her down, another one trying to do something to her. Now he's punching her as the other ones are holding her down. That makes me furious. And then here's another one standing there to guard the crowd. There are more people there. They could take those guys out if they would all act together. If they're going to be violent, we respond with violence. It's about time, folks. Because if we're going to passively sit there while they beat, while they pin down a bunch of these uniformed, jackbooted thugs, pin down a woman, and then beat her, we're going to get to this. That's where we're headed, right there.
Morning, officer.
Extensive criminal history.
These people are already robots, already dehumanized. But it's going to be literal.
Hair products, mostly. I'm just... Hey, I'm just going to work, man. There's nothing in the bag. Come on, I got one.
Misdemeanor citizen disobedience.
Just going to work, man. Come on.
Shit.
Nothing in there, is it?
Zero tolerance policy applies to all citizens.
Oh, shit.
You must report immediately to your parole officer. Thank you, citizen.
No, thank you.
Yes. Lick the boot that kicks you. That's right. That's right. I like this picture. See if you can pull this up, Travis. This article from Zero Hedge. Chaos erupts on the streets of Berlin as police attack anti-lockdown protesters. I love the one picture of this man talking to one of these jackbooted thugs. And he has got his head cocked back, and he is looking down his nose at her. And that's exactly the way the body language... we should adopt. Look, I'm just not going to live under this kind of tyranny. I'm just not going to live under this. Protesters and police clash at virus pass demos, demonstrations in Paris. Again, you know, protesting the fact that they're going to require. There's a picture right there. I love that thumbnail. That's a Rupley video. And then here, if you think it's not coming to U.S., well, here's PBS's Yamaki Alcindor. A black woman, she says, white male conservative voters are to blame for the new CDC crackdown. Appearing on Wednesday's Katie Tour Reports on MSNBC, PBS White House correspondent Yamaki Alcindor declared that, quote, white male conservative voters, unquote, and former President Trump are to blame for the CDC's flip-flopping on their latest guidance. So it's not them. It's not the science. It's just, you know, it's all about politics. It says vaccinated people should be wearing masks, but the facts said otherwise. That's what they flipped on. Guest host Jeff Bennett had asked Alcindor to comment on the confusing nature of the rule, but she decided to attack instead. She said, well, these are the same people who are least likely to follow the guidance, the people who are unvaccinated, the people who don't want to wear masks, largely Republicans, largely white male conservative voters who are looking at these guidance and thinking that there's some sort of conspiracy against their freedom. Now, where would we get a crazy idea like that? It's exactly what this is. This is a conspiracy that has been open and public for decades. And then Jeff Bennett says, and Michael, to Yamaka's great point here, according to a new poll, a whopping 45% of unvaccinated Americans who are not at all likely to get COVID vaccine are Republicans. Compare that to just 12% of the same group who are Democrats. As Chris Minahan points out, information liberation, well, reminds me of when The Root, which I guess he's a rapper or something, his Facebook post, said that whiteness is a pandemic and the only way to stop it is to isolate it, to locate it, to extract it, to kill it. Yes. Whiteness is a public health crisis, said The Root. It shortens life expectancy, being white. It pollutes air. It constricts equilibrium. It devastates forests. It melts ice caps. It sparks and funds wars. It flattens dialects. It infects consciousness, and it kills people. White supremacy is a virus that, no, he's not just talking about white supremacy. He's talking about just white people. It's a virus that, like other viruses, will not die until there are no bodies left for it to infect, which means that the only way to stop it is to locate it, isolate it, extract it, and to kill it. Let me tell you, you know, as we look at these attacks on people because of vaccinated status, I don't know where it is. I got separated in my stack here. I will read it to you, but I had a listener send it to me and said, you know, here is some propaganda that came out of Nazi Germany about the Jews. And all I did was just change the word Jew and substitute unvaccinated. If you want to know where this is going, that's exactly where it's going. So then Roger Kimball, via amgreatness.com, asks in this article, when will the COVID revolt come? See, maybe we do need to have CRT. Not critical race theory, but maybe we need to have COVID revolt time. And again, the most effective way that you can revolt is to live your life in civil disobedience of their dictates. And again, you know, you take the blows, as I've said before. We should be anvil, not hammer. If you have the kind of foundation that you need, if you have a backbone, and again, the backbone is on the inside. If you have that backbone, you can take these blows. They may kill you, but they can't kill your spirit. If you have that foundation. And it's going to require that kind of determination. Same kind of determination that Gandhi used. The same kind of determination that shut down those guards at the Berlin Wall. That kind of determination. They didn't grab a bunch of guns and go storm the guards and shoot them, you know, Great Escape style. They didn't tunnel out. They directly confronted them. And it's going to take that. But it is COVID revolt time, folks, because if we don't do it soon, it's going to be too late. It's been 507 days now. And I've been talking about the COVID revolt long before it got financially incentivized by Donald Trump. Glenn Reynolds, a New York Post columnist, said, there is a great deal of pent-up frustration and resentment over the inconvenience, the loss of freedom, and the general climate of hectoring that the government's pandemic response has created. He says it's irritating to be lectured by officials who claim to be smarter than you. It's infuriating to be lectured by government officials who claim to be smarter than you but clearly are not. The on-again, off-again claims on masks and vaccination are just part of it. And again, it was over a year ago that I had a conversation with a person at InfoWars saying, you know, well, you're saying it's going to be turned on and off like a switch. I said, it sure is. Can't you tell that? Well, where did they say that exactly? I said, they didn't say it in a quote, but I said, that's what they're going to do. Can't you see that coming? It's unbelievable. Tired of masks? Get vaccinated, they told us. Now they're saying wear a mask, even if you've been vaccinated, and even if you're associating with others who have been vaccinated. And there's talk of more lockdowns, which a growing body of scientific evidence suggests were perfectly useless and downright harmful. So, Jim Treacher says this. What do we do? Number one, you absolutely do not wear a mask. Number two, you must wear a mask or you're killing grandma. Number three, don't leave the house or you're killing grandma. Number four, if you can't avoid leaving the house, stay at least 6 feet away from any other humans, beings, or you see, you're killing grandma. Number five, wash your hands 20 times a day. Number six, do not touch your face or anything else, ever. Number seven, get vaccinated so you don't have to wear a mask. Number eight, you have to wear a mask even if you're vaccinated. Number nine, when all the above rules change and then change back, and then change back again, shut up about it. Or you're a stupid conspiracy theorist. Oh, and don't forget to vote Democrat. That's number 10 out of all of the commandments there. Yeah, the government promises to wrap up the war on COVID as quickly and efficiently as they did the war on terror, writes the Babylon Bee. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki announced Monday that the Biden administration is committing to wage a war on COVID that will be fast, efficient, and effective as a war on terror. Well, again, you can't do satire anymore because this is literally true. As I've said many times, and as I pointed out many times, the Dark Winter simulation and then the anthrax false flag attack that happened 1 week after 9/11, those are, you know, the left-right march of tyranny. The difference is that they had to do them in steps. You know, first we got the Patriot Act, and but they laid the foundations for what we are doing today, and they practiced it for 20 years, and they put out the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act. 2 months, so they do a simulation. 2 months later, 1 week after 9/11, they have the anthrax attack, which, and I pointed, you know, look at my interview with the lawyers for 9/11, Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth. They reopened that investigation, which even the mainstream media said at the time was very, very, very fishy by the FBI. They went back and they interviewed people who are still alive. They went back and they got more information out of that stuff. Let me tell you, that was a false flag if ever there was one. And then 2 months later, they roll out the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act, which is telling the states how they need to lay the legal foundation to do to us what they started doing 507 days ago. That was the other shoe to drop. It took them 20 years to drop it. They practiced it. They trained with it. And it was all about draconian lockdowns and untested vaccines being mandated. And so this is a war. And this war began with economic sanctions, as all wars do. In medieval times, what you would do is you would go when you had city-states and you had castles that you would take over, you would take your army up and you would lay siege to them and you'd try to starve them out. Today, the way that looks is you've seen it with Iran and other countries. You know, we put economic sanctions on them and try to starve them into submission. What they've been doing for the last 507 days with these lockdowns is essentially economic sanctions, a siege of the middle class, to starve us out, to make sure that we own nothing, that they train us into submission of a handout, and then they, at the same time, they beat anybody who gets out of line. It punishes them severely. Massive fines or literal beatings, as we're seeing in Germany and in Australia. So, yeah, you're going to do a satire on that? Well, quite frankly, it is a war, and it is a domestic war. And I'm very suspicious that one of the reasons that it's starting to pull more troops back from Afghanistan and Iraq is not because they've had enough. They'll never have enough. They'll never learn. They'll continue to do this type of stuff until they collapse, the American government, as other empires have collapsed when they've overstretched and overreached themselves. It's always the same type of thing that's done in the waning days of an empire. No, they're bringing the troops home because they're going to be using them against you. That's why they're bringing them home. And it's why they are pushing out the people who are reluctant to follow these orders and get vaccinated. You're going to have a vaccinated-only military, and they're pulling them home, and they're going to be using them against you if we don't stop this. And the way, again, the way we stop this now is to not comply. Do not comply. Live your life. Passively, peacefully resist these people, but resist them. Resist them. Prepare and make connections so that you can eat and have a community and have people who are going to support you, people who will pray for you. That is a very powerful weapon. That's not a last resort, folks. Better pray for this country and your family. The plan is, the Babylon Bee says, the plan that we've released is 2 decades to stop the spread. The crux of the program revolves around 3 initiatives. Expand the TSA from 50,000 employees to 50 million employees. This will allow for 100% virus screening at all public and private indoor spaces carried out with the efficiency of professionalism. No, the way that they'll be able to do this is with the leverage of technology. The screening will be done by temperature scanners and other things like that. 2, the enhanced use of domestic drone surveillance, for contact tracing purposes. 3, expansion of the prison facility at Gitmo to hold our most dangerous political prisoners, such as folks who participate in the January 6th Capitol riot or those who share misinformation on Facebook. Let me tell you, we've already got, it's not just Gitmo, we've already got 2 communication management units where they put political prisoners, like Schaefer Cox, like Marty Gottesfeld, and others. And they've already got 2 of them. They're building a 3rd one. That's Gitmo here in the U.S. Quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
All right, and welcome back. And I have an email here from a listener, Ryan. And I just want to thank Ryan. And he says, I've got all the video clips that you put together over the last years. I've transferred them to a Telegram channel. I really do appreciate that. And in terms of moving the studio so that we can move through our house, we had to put everything out in the garage. And we had, and I mentioned this the first day that we did this, which is last Monday. I mentioned it, but because it was a new studio, we had a glitch, and nobody heard what I had to say. So it's a different studio. We've set this up, but we set up a soundproof room because we had issues with that. We had issues with being able to control the light, but we also had issues that we couldn't move through the house. So we had a lot of furniture from the house that we used to have, which was about 4 times the size of this house, and it was just stored in the garage. So we repurposed that, and move the library out here. So this is our studio. But we've been focused on all of that, and I need to get focused over on Telegram because, again, I believe that that is a better space for us to be. They're not censoring people there. He says, your old channel has gained more followers the last 2 or 3 weeks I've been doing this. He says, all you need to do is create an account, and I can add that as an admin. So we're going to be getting in contact with you, Ryan. Thank you for doing all that. He just did that voluntarily. We really do appreciate that. I have this letter from another individual talking about the mask itself and really what is behind it. And I think there's, I agree with a lot of what he has to say about it traditionally playing a big part and occult rituals. It is about dehumanizing us, and we should think about this, especially for kids. The fact that very, very young kids now are growing up in fear of other children and interacting with them. That's going to have lifelong implications for these kids. And also not being able to relate to human beings, to learn body language and other things like this. This is a very psychologically damaging thing, not just the physiological filth of leaving a diaper on your face all day. And you can see it even in the acne. What you can't see is the other aspects on the inside of how bad it is. But it's also oxygen deprivation, an increase in CO2, but it is also the severe psychological issues behind this. But he says this. He said, masking has traditionally played a very important role in occult rituals. The wearing of a mask represents an occult transformation, a human alchemy, if you will, from one role to another. It's a mindset as well, right? From one manner of being to another. Indeed, this is the case from individual sovereign under God to a collective subject under the children of the devil. You see, the masking ritual is specifically designed to reverse the order of hierarchy set in place by God himself. In the hierarchy of your heavenly Father, you are the sovereign representative of his word on the earth, and your job is to speak his word on his sovereign behalf to others. Wearing the mask is a powerful occult symbol, indicating your submission to another power other than the Creator God, who gave you the direct commission to preach his word to the world. Yeah, it is a sign of submission. It is, when it is forced upon people, something that is, I think, very heinous. And it is also something that people have traditionally done when they want to hide something, right? We don't have anything to hide. We shouldn't be ashamed. They should be ashamed. Typically, always up until this point, the people who would wear masks were people who were ashamed of the evil that they were doing. And we need to get back to that. That's one of the reasons why we do not wear the mask. One of the many reasons. This is coming from Charlie, who is at APS Radio, that you just heard. He said, I think you're right. In the coming days, many people will be tested. And he talks about that because of a comment that I had to say about the individual who said, just shut up, don't mention God. It's like, well, I can't do that. It's too much a part of my life, number one. So it would be dishonest for me to do that. But I'm not called to do that. I've called to do just the opposite. And we all are, right? If you're ashamed of Christ in this life, he will be ashamed to own you in the next life. So you don't hide that. You don't hide your light under a bushel. That's what I believe. And so he said, I think I understand what you mean about your belief in God. Those ministers in Canada had the courage to endure days and weeks in jail. They are able to suffer the isolation and the tribulation. And again, you want to see people who've got a backbone, a spine, you will take whatever is dished out. Go back and look at Fox's Book of Martyrs, for example. That's put together by a guy named Fox. What is a martyr? It's a Greek word for witness. You know, when you go back and you look at the cold case for Christianity, a cold case homicide detective wrote that book. He was an atheist. He said, can I really believe, you know, what these people are saying? You look at people who are willing to die rather than to recant. They have absolutely no motive to recant this, and every reason to deny it. You know, you say, tell me that you're lying or I'm going to kill you, you know, that type of thing. And they didn't. They didn't. What would make them act that way? Well, they sincerely believed what they were saying, or they wouldn't have gone down that path. They were given that opportunity. And so the early Christians, they called them martyrs, but that was a Greek word that just meant witness. It didn't mean somebody's going to strap on a suicide bomb and go blow a bunch of people up. That's the way it was repurposed by Islam. No, a martyr was simply a witness. So Fox's Book of Martyrs is really Fox's Book of Witnesses. And these are people who went through all kinds of torture and refused to deny what they believed, what they knew was true, both experientially and intellectually. So, yeah, when we look at that, that's the kind of thing that's going to give you the backbone that we've got to have to stop this thing. So he said, the person you spoke about, while likely he opposes the things that have been done in the past year, he might relinquish his autonomy if he was placed with a very difficult situation, if he did not have that belief. On the other hand, those ministers sustained their autonomy. They endured. He said, I think you're right that in the coming days, many people will be tested. He said, they did not trot out the vaccine, the tyrannical rules, and the mandates only to engage in a giant experiment in psychology, or even only to make money, even though they're making a lot of money. He points out the $33.5 billion that Pfizer is going to make from the vaccine alone, and that's just one of these Trump companies. He said, I think they're fully prepared to impose more tyranny and vaccinations. Yes, because that is foundational to them laying down their authority, to making themselves the totalitarian gods that will rule over us in their mind. He says, I do agree that people who believe in God and who are spiritual, well-grounded in their principles, will likely sustain their autonomy and their course. Getting rights, or rather privileges, from the state means that the state can take those away at any time. And that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Finally, this letter from a listener. I know that this is just a drop in the bucket compared to everything else that's going on, but I work for a game composites company in Bentonville, Arkansas, a sport aerobatic aircraft company, co-owned by one of the Waltons, Stuart Walton. This is not the Walton family that John Boy was in. Good night, Stuart. Good night. No, these are this is the family that has now been, you know, they're not Sam Walton either, you know. Sam Walton is probably a pretty normal guy, but these are the people that have had very abnormal lives. They've got very abnormal brains. And that's a curse that comes with too much money, I think. Sam Walton's grandson. We had a meeting today, and we were informed that when the FDA approves the COVID vaccine, we will be required to get it or we'll be fired. He didn't even have the fortitude to make the announcement himself, but he had a general manager make the announcement. I know somebody like that. After a decade, you're fired. Well, I'm not going to say that you're fired. I'm going to lie about the reasons I fired you. I'm going to give multiple contradictory reasons in the next 3 days, but I'll have a general manager do it for me. Anyway, who could that be? The same day, Walmart announced that all home office employees must be vaccinated by October the 5th or face termination. The other owner, Philip Steinbach, has already been through the experience of government meddling, but continues here in the U.S. According to his pilot profile, regarding his first airplane that he designed and manufactured, it, quote, proved too difficult to compete economically with the labor force of the former Eastern Bloc producers. And after 2 years of struggling, desperately searching for an investor, he had to file for insolvency. Well, now he's got Big Daddy Warbucks Walton, he says. And all he can do is to goose-step in line with the rhythm of the money supply. I would guess that 75% of his workforce and all the middle leadership will not get the vaccine, and the company just broke ground on a new facility for manufacturing another plane. You would think that, you'd like to think that the phrase, you need us, we don't need you, would have some power behind it. But apparently, if you throw enough of Grandpa Walton's billions at a problem, the problem goes away. We'll see. Let me tell you, this is, in microcosm, what happened with Big Daddy Warbucks Trump last year. If you got enough money, and he does, he's got unlimited amounts of money, fiat currency from the Federal Reserve, unlimited amounts of money that he can throw at people to incentivize anything that he wants them to do. This is the way the game is played. It's always been played that way. I've got a section here on schooling. That's what they're doing in schools. That's how they get people to do exactly what they want to do in schools. You throw money at them, and then you say, if you don't do that, I'm going to take that money back. People are controlled by money. The love of money is the root of all evil. It's how you can control people very, very easily. And we've never had the type of wealth that has been created by the combination of technological production and leverage combined with this kind of free money printed, this Keynesian economics or the modern monetary theory. We've never had anything like that before. The confluence of these things, and also I throw in Wall Street, where people can operate for decades without making a profit and continue to get more and more money for whatever they do. We've never had a situation like this before. The massive amounts of the consolidation of wealth and of power and technology is unprecedented in recorded history. And that's what we're up against. And it would be a hopeless situation if it were not for God. I am a child of God, he says, made in his image. There is nothing that will compel me to comply with the nonsense that this virus presents. No threats, no intimidation, no penalty or sting of death will keep me from knowing that and living my life to show that. Good for you, Danny. Appreciate that. Yeah. Vaccine mock fry. I put that up last year. Remember that? Took the sign off of that was there at, was it Auschwitz, I think, where they put that? Arbeit macht frei. Work makes free. You know, the harder you work, the sooner you get free of us. You should die, right? So you just change that a little bit to vaccine macht frei. I'm surprised they didn't shut me down for that. Anyway, let's talk real quickly before we get into homeschooling about the mandated Trump shots and where this is headed. Again, you want to see the hatred, the dehumanizing, and as de Blasio said, the voluntary phase is over. Now we are in the demonization stage. Not only demonization, but dehumanization stage. They're criminal, quote unquote. Free Thought Project says the establishment is now dangerously dehumanizing the vaccine hesitant, those of us who are VH positive. I'm positively against this vaccine, let me tell you. We have a pandemic because the unvaccinated, said Joe Biden. Free Thought Project said he must have missed the part where the pandemic started before there was a vaccine. Good point. I like that a lot. Yeah, it did. You know, by the way, according to their story, the pandemic began before there was a vaccine. But now the pandemic is all the fault of the unvaccinated, right? It doesn't have anything to do with a variant, whether it's real or imagined, which was predicted by Nobel Prize-winning epidemiologist Luc Montagnier and others, the mRNA inventor. No. They all said that this is a very well-known symptom of vaccines, especially for this class of viruses, that they would not be effective and that they would actually make the virus worse, that it would allow more destructive variants to be created. After CNN's attack on the vaccine hesitant, MSNBC followed suit. They had Bill de Blasio come on and say, "Let me tell you, Joe, the anti-vaxxers are criminal at this point." See? We're criminals. We're domestic terrorists. We are killers. We're killing their grandkids now who have zero risk from the virus. But they have nothing but risk from the unvaccinated. So the virus can't kill them. But the unvaccinated, carrying some variant, they say, again, I'm not buying that story, but the unvaccinated can kill their grandkids. They are criminal, says de Blasio, at this point. What they're doing to this country is undermining our future. They really are. They're taking away the future of this country, says the Marxist Bill de Blasio. Because if we go backwards, if we go back to the restrictions and the shutdowns, this country is going to be in a horrible, dangerous place in terms of our lives, our livelihoods, and our economy. And if we don't get it right on vaccination, we're going to lose a huge number of Americans. There are people out there peddling this message, the anti-vax message, for their own profit, and then attacking people who try and do it the right way. Like the small businesses that you're talking about. We've got to confront them. That's why these mandates are so crucial. Yeah. Look at me. Nazi propagandist. Jonathan Turley says the Biden administration goes to war with the non-vaccinated. And again, it is a war. It all started with the Trump sanctions. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky was asked by Fox host Brett Baer, "Are you mandating a vaccine at the federal level?" She responded, "That's something I think the administration is looking into." Later, she reversed herself, saying, "I was referring to the mandates by private institutions and portions of the federal government. There will be no federal mandate. Let me tell you, we've heard the same song and dance in the UK over and over again. There will be no vaccine passport. There will be no mandates. And then they say, oh, but yes, there is. See, they're hiding their true agenda from people. Don't take them at their word. These people are liars. They're lying to your face, as Fauci has always done, as Kerry Mullis said. This month was a clear break from the persuasion and a step toward coercion, writes Jonathan Turley, in dealing with those who refuse to be vaccinated. Even the normally staid CDC is ramping up its rhetoric, declaring that the, quote, war has changed, unquote. They keep using war terms. They keep calling us murderers, terrorists. We are diseased vermin. For some, however, there is concern that Biden's they is a declaration of war on them. Well, yes, because we've heard de Blasio say, as I pointed out yesterday, the voluntary phase is over. So Jonathan Turley says there's three stages here. First, you have the reasoned consent stage. Then you have the induced consent. Yeah, we'll give you some million-dollar lottery prizes. And then you have the coerced consent, and that's where we are. And so I said that last year, last fall, as we were rushing headlong into this insanity, Operation Warp Speed. I said, so here's how it's going to operate. They're going to get the vaccine around the turn of the year, beginning of the year. They're going to start rolling it out slowly to some people, and then no matter what happens, they will cover up the adverse effects. And they'll continue to get more and more people. They will roll out a massive PR campaign that's already been funded, $250 million from the Ad Council. You can see the funding that's happening on YouTube and elsewhere. Then they will financially incentivize this. They will coerce people through the corporations. And then I said by the summer, things will ease up a little bit because, again, it's going to be pretty hard for them to say there's an epidemic when nobody's even getting a cold. If somebody's got a cold, they can call it a case of COVID. But if you don't even have a cold during the summer, it's kind of hard for them. And yeah, you can get a cold during the summer, but it's not as usual. And I said, and also they're going to have to catch up in terms of supply. So then be careful because as we head into the fall, they're going to mandate it for the kids. They're going to be caught up on supply. And then they're going to say, and now we got more cases that are coming in and it's because of you unvaccinated. And that's exactly it's just rolling out, very, very predictable from the very beginning what was going to happen with this. The greatest danger, says Jonathan Turley, with the coercion model, is that it will further deepen our divisions and it will turn vaccine resistance into a type of patriotic resistance for some people. It has always been that. It was patriotic resistance before this started. And I said on the 16th, after Trump locked us down on the 13th with a big magic money bag, I said, you know, what the British people were told as they were facing the Nazis on the other side of the channel, facing the Battle of Britain, the sign that you've seen, keep calm and carry on. But the other one that they said was even more important. Liberty is in peril. Defend it with all your might. It didn't matter what this disease was. It doesn't matter in the scheme of things right now. We need to shut down gain-of-function research. But to look backward as to, you know, can we pin this on Fauci, that is more partisan politics games. Right now, yeah, we should shut down Fauci. We should shut down the gain-of-function. We should shut down the NIH and the FDA. If they're going to go out there and financially do murder for hire of baby body parts that they want fresh, not frozen, via Planned Parenthood, they should be shut down. In a just society, these people would be going to jail. Instead, they politically persecute the people who blow the whistle on them, and then those people, Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra, get appointed to vice president and the head of HHS. This is not a just government. It is against our lives. It is against our liberties. You know, we must not comply with this. Before I run out of time, I want to get into homeschooling. I've got more to say about the lockdown, but we've talked a lot about the police state that is surrounding and at the center of all of this. And I want to talk about the future. I want to talk about our kids, our grandkids. You know, when you look at what is being done to them in these institutions that we call school, and the first thing you need to get into your head is that school is not education. It's not. They're two different things. School is an institution. And let me tell you that education is not a collection of facts. It is an orientation. It is an enablement of you to learn. That is what education is. It is the tools of learning. It has nothing to do with an institution. As a matter of fact, an institution that makes you completely dependent upon authority figures is why we're in the situation we're in today, where people have lost an understanding of the scientific method. They've lost an understanding of critical thinking. They become completely dependent on scholasticism. Again, going back to Francis Bacon, he didn't call it authoritarianism. He didn't call it an argument from authority. He called it scholasticism because that's where it flowed from. And that's where the authority is flowing from right now. That's where the passivity, where the domination, where the submission is flowing right now. And so what are they doing to our kids? Well, first of all, it's not just the schools. Understand, it is a full spectrum. It's the entertainment. Hollywood has taken over our culture. And that is such a distressing thing when you stop and think about it. The fact that the most degenerate aspects of our society were the ones who were shaping the culture. The culture is not being shaped by Christians. Christians have become passive. They become passive consumers of this constant stream of from Sodom and Gomorrah of programming. And it is programming. It's programming you. And so Disney and their program, Muppet Babies, this is a program that is aimed at children 4 to 7 years old. They said, very early on, we wanted to do an episode where Gonzo just showed up to the playroom wearing a skirt. Now, why would they want to do that? Why would they decide to do that for 4 to 7 year olds? Well, they talk about it in a little bit more detail. They said, but then the story editor and co-producer, Robin Brown, and her team wanted to take it a step further, and they wanted to do a Cinderella story based on that idea, the idea that we should have Gonzo wearing a skirt. And it was just so wonderfully Gonzo. We hope that he inspires kids watching, kids between the ages of 4 and 7. We hope that he inspires these 4 to 7 year old kids to be 347% of themselves in their own way, too. And as people saw it, they were so excited. They said, I just felt incredibly emotional. They commented on Twitter, this is a kid's show, and it's really hitting hard on this subject. Piggy referred to the mysterious princess, that would be Gonzo in drag, as they, in quotes. I'm going to scream. I love it, right? They, the pronoun they. The episode, which aired last month, was quickly applauded by the advocates of the transgender agenda. And Gonzo, as they point out in this Breitbart article, is a sexless puppet in the TV show. But he's always been recognized and referred to as a male because of his male character and his actions and the way that he talks and so forth. And so they knew that. They understood that, right? Gonzo says in the episode where he declares that he's a princess, he said, everyone, there's something I need to tell you. The princess who came to your ball tonight with me, I'm Gonzarella. I want to be me, says the male character while wearing a dress. Now, this is not the first time we've seen this. Of course, you had the LGBT program that was just a farce. I don't know if I showed that I did show a short clip of that. They had some talentless fat man wearing a dress. It was cringeworthy. I mean, in terms of Disney's production values, this looked like something that was done on a shoestring budget on local, cable channel or something. It was amazing. But they put things in there. They had two boys, one boy singing to the other one and calling him princess and stuff like that. This is a common recurring theme. A boy is a princess. For Disney, it's now a common theme. The producer's endorsement of the trans agenda ideology did not mention the known risks of transgender status for children. The risks include health risks from drugs and hormones, surgery, the sexual and social isolation of people who claim to be transgender, and the refusal to recognize the non-transgender sources of teenagers' distress. I don't need to make a pragmatic argument. We know that this is harmful psychologically and spiritually, not just socially and physically for these kids. And we need to get to the crux of the issue, right? That's it. Yeah, you have Bruce Jenner, when he's running. He can safely say, well, as an athlete, I don't think it's fair for biological men to compete against women. But he won't talk about what they're doing to the children. What they're doing to the children is sexual grooming. And even worse than that, it is satanic grooming. But if you want to just focus on the pedophile aspect of it, just understand that. Many progressives, writes Breitbart, are inflating their social status. Exactly right. They're virtue signaling. They're inflating their social status with the people in their Hollywood community and their support for the trans agenda. For example, movie actress Jamie Lee Curtis recently claimed to Hollywood that she, quote, watched in wonder and pride as our son became our daughter, Ruby. Which made me think about that family. Multiple generations and what I've seen happen in Hollywood over the different generations. You know, you had Janet Leigh and people of her generation, Elizabeth Taylor, famous because, scandalous because she divorced and had multiple husbands. That was unheard of at the same time. Debbie Reynolds was, you know, was scandalous that she got divorced and so forth. They would use sexual innuendo, but they typically, like Debbie Reynolds, was not sexualized in the movies. You had Janet Leigh, who was in Psycho, and she had the shower scene, but it was implied nudity. Nothing was shown. But then you have her daughter, Jamie Lee Curtis, who we're talking about here. And her career is highly sexualized and explicit. And then you notice that in the next generation, the kids are LGBT. Right? We see this with Cher. We see it with Jamie Lee Curtis. These actresses who basically prostituted themselves on the screen, they wind up with the LGBT generation. It is a process of degeneracy that this country is going through. And everybody is following Hollywood. Everybody is following Disney. Everybody is following these people that they think they have a relationship with somehow, these celebrities. Why is the deep state sexualizing kids? Asked the New American. This is a video that Alex Newman, who is very good on the school issues, he says, well, since Karl Marx, totalitarians have understood that undermining and destroying the family is critical to achieving these objectives. If only it was Karl Marx that we were fighting. We're fighting something much more powerful, much more long-lasting. We're fighting principalities and powers that have been around since the creation. We need to understand what we're fighting here. And, you know, you look at how this is manifested throughout time. It didn't even begin with Karl Marx. Yes, he picked up on this. But, you know, we had Plato in Plato's Republic. He did not want to have families. He wanted everybody connected to the state. And he basically envisioned the same kind of stratified society that was put into a modern technological milieu by Huxley in Brave New World. You have different strata of society, but everybody serves the state. And how do you keep them under control? Well, Huxley knew. It was with sex and drugs. That's how you keep them under control. And of course, to an extent, it was that way with Plato. It was also that way with the Phoenicians, as I've mentioned before, right? The people in the area of Canaan, where the Israelites went in, also the people in Carthage, northern Africa, they had the big child sacrifice areas, the Tophets. People can go back, just a mountain of children's skulls. They would sacrifice their children to Moloch after they had unwanted pregnancies because they also had the twin deity that they worshipped, Ashtaroth. And so Plato was using the same type of thing in Plato's Republic to push this out. And so where are we today? Well, we've got the American Medical Association. Right? You want to talk about a pandemic and how we're going to control this with medicine and with science. Let me tell you why that isn't going to happen, because the AMA is so thoroughly politicized that they're now saying we need to remove biological sex from birth certificates. That's the American Medical Association. They're gone. They're hopeless. Don't put any hope in these corrupt officials in these hospitals or even in the American Medical Association, which has just become a bunch of drug pushers for big pharmaceutical companies. They've become the handmaids of the pandemic. And, of course, these people are also going to push in terms of health measures, got to have gun control and many other things, right? Birth certificates, they said, should not include sex, as it might hamper individuals who at some point decide to live as something other than their biological sex. They said only 10 states allow for gender-neutral designation, typically an X on the birth certificate. So they just want it removed. And again, who are they to decide, right? Who's the Supreme Court to decide any of these issues? The Supreme Court doesn't have that authority. Neither does the AMA. We need to fight this at the state level. They can't make these dictates. But, of course, this is what your medical dictators want. They're fully on board with this entire agenda, and it is a single agenda. There's not separate things. The trans agenda, the racist agenda of critical race theory and all that kind of stuff, that's not different from the vaccine agenda, from this lockdown agenda, from the pandemic agenda, and it is global. It is not limited to one country or political party either. Existing AMA policy recognizes that every individual has a right to determine their gender identity and sex designation on government documents. Therefore, we have to remove it. Assigning sex using binary variables in the public portion of the birth certificate fails to recognize the medical spectrum of gender identity, says a person writing this for the AMA. The report startlingly claims, quote, there is no clear standard for defining sex designation. They've abandoned biology. So I've said for the longest time the answer to LGBT is B-O-B, Bob. Biological, objective, and binary. That's what your gender is. There's not a difference between sex and gender. Designating sex on a birth certificate as male or female suggests that sex is simple and binary. And it is. And that's why we need to preserve that. National Review commented and said it's astonishing how the transgender moral panic has swept actual science aside. The AMA will no longer pay any attention to biology. So I guess that makes it easier because, you know, they're also not paying any attention to grades or merit. So now we just get rid of the biology classes, right? Have people come in, and they tell you their symptoms, and you go to the pharmaceutical drug chart that's provided to you, and you just look at the symptoms, and you follow it over there, and you give them the pill. Crowds gasp as parents read the school's pornographic books out loud at a board meeting. And again, why would you sexualize kids in elementary school, junior high school, and even in high school with the kind of stuff that they're doing? And it is a gradual progression of this stuff. Parents finally have a window into what their kids are being exposed to in the classroom. That's what happened in Carmel, Indiana, where parents learned the full scope of perversion being peddled to their children. And I'll say again, all of this QAnon nonsense about how Trump was rounding up pedophile networks, if he wanted to round up pedophile networks, he'd get rid of the Department of Education and the funding that is incentivizing this. He'd get rid of this kind of curriculum. But no, we're supposed to believe that he's out there secretly shutting down all this stuff. They won't even change the statute of limitations on pedophilia. You've been lied to. It was 4D chess, right? And you're the pawn. One parent spoke out against the global campaign to promote sexualized material to grade school children. It is heralded by the UN, it is championed by Planned Parenthood, and it's making its way into Carmel schools in Indiana. Here are some of the examples for elementary school. Introducing Teddy, a gentle story about gender and friendship. It uses a teddy bear to teach kids that gender isn't determined by biology. Well, it's determined by your stuffings? What is it? There's also Sparkle Boy about a toddler's cross-dressing tendencies and Call Me Max, in which a kindergarten girl gets a teacher to call her by a boy's name. Another parent read from a novel available at the Carmel High School that includes a pornographic scene explicitly describing characters engaged in various sex acts. A third parent read from It's Perfectly Normal, that's available to middle school kids, and it's promoted by Planned Parenthood. And it teaches very detailed sexual techniques to middle schoolers. Another book called Crank details a disturbing rape that transpires when a young couple goes into the woods to get drunk and high on meth. Alvin Louie, a parent activist, said in May that he fled California to escape the radical leftist ideology, only to find it in his new home in Indiana. He said, "If I had raised my daughter in California, the school and the culture there would teach her that the two most important things in her life are that she's Asian and that she's female. And that's not that important, is it? I mean, we were always told that, you know, the things that you can't change are not important. You focus on things that you can change. And so regardless of what you are in terms of ethnicity, in terms of sexual gender, you need to be able to move on to do whatever you feel. That's what liberty is really about, right? But that's not the message anymore. The message is now we're going to put you in a box based on your sex, based on your skin color, based on all these other issues, your religion as well." He said he began to worry about his daughter's new school when he saw ideas like critical race theory make their way into the curriculum, a change that happened right after they hired their first diversity, equity, and inclusion officer in January. Talked about this the other day. They even abbreviate that as DEI, as in DEI, right? Like Opus Dei. Yeah. The new officers who become God. The report that I had the other day talking about the ratio, how many more DEI people there were than history teachers, because they don't want you to know history. They want to make these people God over you. He says, "If I were to read what has been given to my child in public school," he said, "I wouldn't be able to read it over the air because of FCC obscenity laws. Everyone was uncomfortable. And these are adults. So they go to this meeting and they talk about this and everybody is uncomfortable with that." And this is something that's been building for a long time. Nonprofit mass resistance is up in Massachusetts. They've been fighting this. And I remember when this was 30 years ago, what they were fighting at the time was age-inappropriate sexual instruction of an 8-year-old and a father who got in trouble for that, trying to stop the school from teaching that to his kids. And so the school said, "No, we're going to teach it to your kids." And the judge said, "Well, once you drop them off at the school door, the doctrine is in loco parentis. You have abandoned your child to the state, and we will operate in place of the parents, and we will do whatever we wish to your kid." Now, that was like 30 years ago. And, you know, quite frankly, I think it's inappropriate for strangers to talk to your kids about sex. End of story. That's not what we were looking for, I think, the general public, when we started creating schools as a community. So now it's time for us to start questioning why we are doing schooling as a community. You know, as I've mentioned many times, this has been an opportunity, the golden lining. It's not just silver, it's gold. The idea that we have an opportunity to examine how schooling is done, to rethink that. It was actually forced upon us. That's a blessing. And now we have an opportunity where we can decide that we are going to get our kids out of the school. And then the next step is to shut down these institutions that are damaging our neighbors' kids. We need to defund these schools. California parents are pulling their children from public schools. "I don't want my daughter to be exposed to any type of sex education at any grade level, and I don't want her introduced to any type of critical race theory at any grade level," said Denise Ramirez to the Epoch Times. She enrolled her daughter in a private Christian school to attend kindergarten. The facility remained open during the pandemic and did not require the kindergartners to wear masks. She said her boys were exposed to comprehensive sex education in grade 7 in the government school, and she wasn't going to let that happen to her kid, her daughter. And so we have, as I point out, a big surge in homeschooling, so much so that you have some of the homeschooling organizations that are answering questions for people. So we had to double our staff, and it is tripled the number of Black people who are doing homeschooling. They said Jennifer Gonzalez from Appomattox, Virginia, chose to homeschool her three sons, ages 9, 13, and 15, after their Catholic school in Lynchburg closed last year because of a decrease in enrollment. She said, "My kids have just excelled and were able to be home and to be together." She said, "The silver lining is that we have more time to know what the kids are learning. And she said, I didn't really know what I was going to do. One other lady, she said, my son did great with homeschooling, even with just 2 hours of school work a day. I got to give him a piano lesson. She said, I had no idea how this was going to go. I just dove in head first, and I felt like God was holding my hand. Do you think that if you jump into something like this to honor God, do you think that he will honor you? You have that promise. You have that promise. That's it for the broadcast today. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.